ladies and gentlemen, recorded in Fredericton, New Brunswick, Canada, it's time for Fight Night Picks with your host, Frank
and Matt
Allen.
Big time fight card coming up this weekend. We have UFC London. The return to the UK fights back across the world, and you absolutely love to see it. As always, one half of your hosting duo, Craig Allen. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Craig Allen FNP. With me to my left, to your right, Matt Allen on the respective socials. We make it very easy to find us. It's at Matt Allen FNP. And for the channel, for the generalities, at Fight Night Picks. Now, big time weekend that was. Thiago Santos taking on Magomed Ankalaev. A lot of underdogs hitting on the prelims. And a big time card overall for Fight Night Picks. But really looking to parlay that into a busy weekend coming up this weekend. And with the return to London, there are so many heavy hitters on this card. I know we talked about it with the last Fight Night. One of the strongest ones that we've had in a very, very long time. Great investments in some of these co-main events. But when we look ahead to this weekend, Arnold Allen, Dan Hooker in the main event, Tom Aspinall with the biggest opportunity of his young MMA career, taking on the former Bellator great, the current UFC top flight heavyweight. It is Alexander Volkov. Matt, I know I'm very excited about this card, and I know you are too.
It should be a great card top to bottom. And like you said, a huge opportunity for Tom Aspinall in this main event, because it seems that every single heavyweight in this division comes to a point where they have to fight Alexander Volkov in a five-round main event just so we figure out what they're really made of. Oddly enough, Francis Ngannou didn't have to pass that test to get to the title, but it seems like everybody else has had to fight Volkov along the way. And does he win every single one of these fights at the top? No, but the great thing about Volkov is that he's so well-rounded, he's so tricky on the feet that he's always going to expose something new out of your game, and he's always going to make us learn more about his opponent. And we have some great returns up and down this card too. Gunnar Nelson, a former top-ranked fighter, is making his long-awaited return. Arnold Allen too, it seems like he only fights once in a blue moon. It's just, there's so many great fighters on this card that we just don't get to see fight often enough.
A ton of great fights, and Alexander Volkov, either you're the hammer and you're beating Greg Hardy in a main event, or you're the nail in a last-second Hail Mary from Derek Lewis. We're going to throw it on over to our Fight of the Night screen, as always, presented by your ad here. Sponsor the show. Get that ad out there. We certainly would appreciate it. A big-time audience of rabid MMA fans. You guys love this Fight of the Night screen. We'll throw it on over there.
Let us know down below in the comment section who you've got. It's time for the Fight of the Night with Fight Night Picks.
And we hate to cherry pick a Fight Night Picks with the co-main event, but Arnold Allen taking on Dan Hooker, it is a premier matchup at featherweight. When you look at it, like Matt said in the intro, I mean, Arnold Allen does not fight all that often. But when he does, it is fireworks. It is exciting. First round knockdown in his last fight against Super Sadiq Youssef. Definitely a great one to have. He's beaten legends like Gilbert Melendez in the past. But for Arnold Allen, this is one of the bigger names to put on his resume in Dan Hooker. And for Dan Hooker, been there and done that at 45, at 155. He's fought some of the best in the game. And lately, the results have been a little bit of a mixed bag. But if you want to go back and see a great win, even recently, his impressive win over Nasrat Haqparast, where he showed off a very improved and complete skill set. So I think this one is going to be fireworks and deserving to be on the Fight of the Night screen.
I was never all that sold on Arnold Allen until his last fight against Sadiq Youssef, because when you fight someone like Sadiq and you beat him in the type of fight that they had together, it kind of proves just how good you are. And with Arnold Allen, I'm all aboard the hype train now. I might be the conductor of it all of a sudden. I may have said in like two shows ago, I would maybe favor Arnold Allen to beat Brian Ortega. Like, I really do think he belongs in that breath in this division. I think this is going to be a great fight, and Dan Hooker is a great test. I know, like you said, have the wins always been there lately? Not necessarily, but he's a tough out for anybody, regardless of weight class. But that is the interesting wrinkle. How will Dan Hooker look making his return to 145 pounds?
Big time fight. When we look at our second pick, listen, it's UFC London. Plenty of fighters representing the United Kingdom, and one of such is Wales' own Jack Shore, undefeated. And when we look at Jack Shore, performance bonus in his UFC debut, former Cage Warriors bantamweight champ, able to get that done, get the contract, and he's made an immediate impact in this division. And he's drawn some big time talent, but those fights just haven't materialized. He ultimately gets Timur Valiyev here, and for lucky Timur Valiyev, the no contest on his record, the loss to Trevin Jones, who ended up losing to Javid Basharat this past weekend. But when we look at this fight, Timur Valiyev, very speedy, in and out, both stances. He is the ultimate test with a great ground game as well. Taking on Jack Shore, and if we know anything about Jack Shore, his striking improved, and we saw that in his last fight against Ludovic Shalinian, who came in on short notice, but he is just meat and potatoes with his ground game, and it is hard to get Jack Shore off you when he gets that back.
This fight kind of reminds me of Shavkat Rakhmonov versus Carlson Harris not that long ago, because if you know, you know, and if you know, you know how good Timur Valiyev is, just like you knew how good Carlson was. So maybe sort of the more, you know, the mainstream audience, if you will, the people who don't watch every fight night card, they might see Timur Valiyev and think, oh, just some other guy. But if you get a win over someone like Timur Valiyev, it proves us just how good you are, and Jack Shore is at that stage of his career. How many busts are there in MMA, like prospect-wise? More than any other sport, I would say. Hands down. Like, yeah, Anthony Bennett was a terrible first overall pick, but for the most part, in other sports, they've got it drawn out to where they've got scouts and they know who is and who is not going to be good. In MMA, there's a new prospect born every other day, and they seem to be sold to us by the broadcast. Jack Shore has been everything they've sold to us and more. He has delivered in his prospect status, but now it's time to see, are you just another prospect, or can you actually become a contender? And I think this is the first step to get there.
And Jack Shore, one of the few last year to not fall victim to the FNP interview curse when JHK was doing the damn thing. Him and, I guess, Stamp Fairtex.
It just proves how good he is.
The two big ones to keep getting wins. We absolutely love these fights, and so glad that you could check out the Fight of the Night screen. So ultimately, plenty of fight bookings that fell through, fights that were moved around, and we talked about it. I mean, Jack Shore, he was originally scheduled for another opponent. Umar Nurmagomedov, fights shuffled, rebooked,
what
so on and so forth. Tom Aspinall was supposed to take on Shamil Dirkhimov, but they went, Tom Aspinall's a knock and Shamil is a not. But when it comes to this card, a lot of exciting matchups, and the guy that we kind of buried the lead on, Muhammad Makhachev, I mean, two-time IMMAF world champion, a European champion, he has carved out a very impressive career, not just on the amateur scene at 23-0, but already 5 or 6-0 as a pro, depending on how you look at one of his exhibition fights. It was a three-rounder. UFC counts it as the real McCoy, and no contest due to the biggest kick to the cup I've seen in recent memory. He made a man scream inside the cage, but when it comes down to his fight against Cody Durden, there's a lot of heat on Cody Durden for his post-fight comments after his last fight against Arichi Long. But when I look at this card overall, Matt, there's so many fights to get excited about. This is one of those ones that maybe you don't like this fight, maybe you can mix and match, but overall, this one should deliver.
I'm really excited for this card. We haven't even talked about Ilya Topuria fighting, and he might be the most skilled prospect in the whole UFC. So that just shows you the depth that this card has, and let's get into it and start breaking it down.
Big time show. Check us out again. Question mark kicks 2 hours before the prelims, the final look at the card. We get the look back through the entire week. If there's any fights that have fallen out or are rebooked, we will be sure to update them here on the channel. So toss that sub if you please, so you know when we go live, and add those extra videos. And a like is always appreciated to bump that video up there. So big time action coming up this weekend. Keep locked in with Fight Night Picks. And as we always say, let's get into it. In MMA, there's a common theme that goes around. And for the prospect Nathaniel Wood, it's his nickname. I mean, there are good nicknames out there in MMA. I mean, think of it. The Korean Zombie, that's a pretty good one. Matt, can you think of another? The Predator,
El Francis Pantera. Yair Rodriguez.
That's a good one. But when you're 17-5 and 28 years old, you can't call yourself the prospect anymore. So for Nathaniel Wood, we're going to do something new with Fight Night Picks, and I'm just going to show you right now what it is. All right, so when it comes to Nathaniel Wood, we've got the dartboard here, and you can see all the different picks. We just threw these out there, names in a hat. But Matt and I, we're going to try and hit the dartboard, and we're going to get a couple different options for nicknames. Nathaniel Wood has got to pick between one of the two. Let's get into it. All right, Matt, so we have the brightest light possible in the entire world. You are the red dart. You're going to throw it at the board.
I'm bad at darts, for the record. And here's the thing. Do you have a favorite going into this?
Not quite. I mean, the fans have already seen all the choices there.
Because personally, I'm probably not going to be able to get it. I think Nimble Nathaniel Wood is phenomenal.
Ooh, look at that. Matt went with the British Bruiser right off the hop. There we go, British Bruiser. All right, so I like Goodwood. I think Morning's pretty good. I have Robin Hood up there because obviously the London connection. Diesel, because there's so many Diesels out there. Union Jack, London Calling, that one's Bisping. Here we go.
Look at that. All right, London Lightning, hey!
All right, the world's brightest light, and it shines a weird haze, but you look at it right there. I mean, so we've got two. We've got the British Bruiser. We got the London Lighthouse. So listen, Nathaniel, you got to pick one of the two, pal. And with that, we hit you up with Fight Night Picks A Different Look. So it's got to be either the London Lighthouse or it's got to be the British Bruiser. You let us know down below in the comments section what you're going with. If you're listening to the podcast on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, you're probably sitting there banging your hand on the steering wheel, scratching your head, wondering what the F the boys at Fight Night Picks just did. But that's why you have to watch the video portion. The people that just skip to the picks, they have no idea what's going on.
They're missing out on a lot of fun in between.
They really are, but ultimately when it comes down to this fight, the Al Zelino, you gotta follow him at PHRE over there on Twitter. March 4th, the fact that out is Ludwig Shalinian and in steps Vince Morales, and a resurgent Vince Morales, I might add, because for Vince Morales, Matt, he's in that zone where at Fight Night Picks, and I think a lot of people out there in this world, they had no idea what to expect out of Vince Morales, and he has looked great his last number of fights. And realistically, you kind of try and put everything together. He appears on Dana White's Contender Series in 2018, and he doesn't look like a wrestler, and he doesn't look like a striker against Domingo Pilarte. So he kind of comes back. He gets a win against 3-4 Justin Hugo over with Bellator by decision. That was enough to get him into a fight against Song Yadong. Does that fight make sense on paper?
So wait, he went from fighting a guy who had more professional losses than wins, and the next thing he knew, he had to fight Song Yadong. No, that makes no sense to me, Craig.
It doesn't make a ton of sense. So he goes out there, he loses the decision to Song Yadong, who brought together a very well-rounded performance, 30-27s across the board. He fights Eamon Zahabi, and listen, Zahabi's a guy out of Montreal. I mean, Ottawa's only a few hours away. It's a close-to-home fight. It's a hometown fight, if you really want to say that. And for Zahabi, at times, he does actually train out of Ontario. In that one, Vince Morales bringing it together. He gets the win over Zahabi. It was a close fight. He goes out and loses to Benito Lopez, but that's the biggest but out there. I mean, that's like Kim Kardashian. Like, we look at that one on MMA Decisions, and if you really do consider it, 430-27s for Morales, 130-28, which is a bit of a head scratcher, 629-28s for Morales in that one. He's able to get a knockdown in that fight, but somehow he loses it. It's like Miranda Maverick against Macy Barber. It doesn't make any sense. So he goes out there against Chris Gutierrez, gets his leg kicked off, TKO his leg
bad
kicks.
Performance.
But ultimately, he switches things up. He moves it to Syndicate. Big win over Draco Rodriguez. Big win over Luis Smolka, where he went double jab, right hand, overhand, drops him over into the corner, finishes it up with a little bit of ground and pound. But great wins for Vince Morales, who, again, coming in on short notice, his cousin, you know it, out of Oregon, is Ricky Simone. His girlfriend has been in his corner as well, a professional fighter, we should
add. And it's not like a Mike Perry ordeal or any of that. She's just in the corner. She definitely has the credentials to be there.
That much is true. But I have to say so many positive things about Vince Morales, because he has wrestling as his number one skill, but we've seen him really round things out with his hands, and we knew he already had the big power coming into Contender Series, coming back into the UFC, so on and so forth. But I absolutely love what I've seen out of Vince Morales recently.
And he's made huge improvements as of late. Like, normally when you're completely written off as an MMA fighter, it's really hard to get people brought back in. But for Vince Morales, he's been able to do that his last two times out. And I wasn't sold after the Draco Rodriguez fight, because let's be honest, Draco is not some world beater by any means. But when you go out there and you get a nice finish win like he was able to over someone like Luis Smolka, who, yes, we make jokes, the highs are high and the lows are low, but like, Luis Smolka is a quality win. And how often do we talk about that on this channel? There's MMA wins. Then there's actually quality wins in the division. I would say without a doubt, Luis Smolka is one of those wins. But for Vince Morales, it's going to be really interesting, because Draco Rodriguez and Luis Smolka do not fight at all like Nathaniel Wood does. And Wood is such an interesting character in this division, because he's huge for bantamweight. Very, very large frame, and he is able to use that very well. He has great footwork, really good reach with his strikes too. But what Wood does very well is he's a very accurate striker, especially at that long range. And he's someone who really will make you pay for trying to move forward on him. And the weird thing about Wood, I know we poke fun with the whole prospect thing, is that he showed up as almost like a refined product already. You know what I mean? And that's kind of what I'm getting towards right now with Nathaniel Wood. I feel like he showed up as a borderline top 15 talent, just ready-made coming into the UFC. He's still sort of at that point right now, though, and it would be nice to see him be able to add some new wholesale wrinkle to his game, because we know how good his kind of straight strikes are, the 1-2 setups and then, you know, footwork and all that. But if he was able to add in, like, a legitimate wrestling threat, or if he was able to add in maybe a few more kicks to his game, or even just get his cardio slightly better, I really do think he would be able to break through those rankings and really be a mainstay for them.
Well, and the craziest thing, I mean, when you look at it for Vince Morales, he's a little bit taller, a little bit longer, hasn't necessarily gone to his wrestling in the UFC all that much, although that is his big skill. For Nathaniel Wood, he will mix in the threat of the takedown. You look at his last fight against Casey Kenney, it was razor thin. That was a loss. That fight was actually quite a while ago. He was inactive in 2021. I'll throw it up there on the screen. He actually broke his right hand, so he had that on Instagram. I mean, listen, I've been in a position where I broke...
You're not comparing yourself to Nathaniel Wood.
Bomb-ass scar over there. But I broke both the bones in my forearm. And it is a lengthy recovery process. Now, for me, I threw my shoulder out of line going to throw a baseball after that and really getting ready for that season. But for Nathaniel Wood, a long bit of inactivity. He has been booked in different bouts. He was originally getting set for an old J-Mart bout back in September. Matt's guy, Jonathan Martinez. But the weird thing, when I look at it for Nathaniel Wood, you bring it up. I mean, he has the Cage Warriors lineage, former Bantamweight champ over there. He has a fight of the night against Kenny his last time out. Performance bonus in his debut against Johnny Eduardo. He was a minus 235 against Johnny Eduardo, minus 125 against Andre Yuel, minus 310 favorite against everybody's perennial underdog, Jose Alberto Quinones. He was a minus 155 against John Dodson. He got finished in that fight. He was a minus 410, if you go back, against John Castaneda, which it's kind of crazy how wide that line was based on how good John Castaneda's looked of late. And he was a plus 115 against Casey Kenney. So for Nathaniel Wood, he is perennially a favorite with the exception of the one fight that we've seen. He is 17-5 as a pro. The prospect no longer. Vote for those two nicknames. But when we look at the odds for this one, Great Britain top teams own, you know, Brad Pickett's going to be there with his fedora in the corner. Nathaniel Wood opened a minus 210 favorite. He's a minus 253 on best fight odds. For Vince Morales, opened a plus 180. He's a plus 203. If we have a look at the topology vote, surprise to us, they are to you. Nathaniel Wood, he is a London guy, like a true London guy at the London card. I'm going to assume he's going to have the fan support. I'm going to say over under 80% here.
I would say over.
Going to say over. It is an over. 342 total votes, 91% Wood, 81% by decision. For the 9% that have Morales, what is it, 53% by decision, 31% by knockout. I think Vince Morales has a great shot in this one. The one thing that does worry me, though, is the fact that Nathaniel Wood is peppering in combination all the time. And sometimes Vince Morales can get caught waiting, and then he unleashes. And in those in-betweens, I think Nathaniel Wood's going to have his number.
I agree with everything you said except for the start. I don't think Vince Morales is a great chance. Like, this is an uphill battle type of fight for him. It really is. This is a huge step up in competition going from fighting Louis Smolka, who doesn't even belong in this weight class. He used to be a flyweight. Now you're fighting Nathaniel Wood, who, let's be honest, I thought he beat Casey Kenney, and I'm not a big, oh, I disagree with the scorecards. But, like, that was a really close fight. We all know how good Kenny is. And I don't think Vince Morales is in that level of, like, the Casey Kenney's Nathaniel Woods. And I really do think that there's a big difference between being one of those borderline ranked guys and being an unranked bantamweight, because we talk about this division all the time. I would say 135, 45, and 55. It's like the sweet spot right now, just for MMA in general. And I think Nathaniel Wood really is one of the top guys at 135.
Nathaniel Wood is 9-1 fighting at home in London proper. And you look at it, he does have one fight in the UFC in London. That was on a big time card, Darren Till versus Jorge Masvidal. He was able to get the win over Teco Quinones. So in this fight, both of us going with, is it the British Bruiser? Is it the London Lighthouse? Nathaniel Wood, bark that one out there and maybe he changes his nickname. Pre-fight, we get some big time fights on this card, so you're not going to want to miss it. Keep it locked in with Fight Night Picks, as we always say.
Let's get into it.
It is the return of Wales' own Poppins, making that second time out in the UFC. And if you look at it, she is a big-time fighter, taking on Elise Reed, the former Cage Fury strawweight champion. And for Elise Reed, she didn't have many fights to get there. I know you look at it, 7-0 as an amateur, 6-1 as a pro, the lone loss in a short-notice debut, up a weight class against Sajara Eubanks. If there was a deck of cards, all of them including the Jokers, were stacked against her in that one. She was taken down early. She was finished in that fight. And it's kind of crazy when you look at it for Elise Reed, because one win that she has on her record, it's controversial, but against Jasmine Jazz DeVizius, where she's able to get the win by split decision to win that belt with Cage Warriors. And oh, by the way, what was the record in that fight? 1-0. And for Elise Reed, her pro debut was against somebody named Rebecca Brigman. You might otherwise know her as Orion Starr. You can look it up, as they say. But she gets the win there with Bellator. She gets the win over Jasmine Jazz DeVizius, a win over Jillian DeCourcy that you see out there on Twitter all the time, judging fights, so on and so forth. Very active in the Twitter community. And a win over Hillary Rose, that's been UFC adjacent for a very long time. She has a win over Glory Watson, who's a big prospect locally in the Bangor area of Maine. But for Elise Reed, once more, the deck was really stacked against her in her UFC debut, taking on Sajara Eubanks, who at one point was just the heir apparent to the throne until the weight cutting issues, which has been a career issue. So for Reed,
if there's a conductor of the Sajara Eubanks hype train, Craig, I can take it from here. Because hey, I thought it was irresponsible for them to make Elise Reed fight Sajara Eubanks. I remember saying that in the prediction video, like, this is gonna be a bad one, guys. Like, I know Sajara Eubanks isn't what we thought she was going to be coming out of The Ultimate Fighter. There was very high expectations for her. She was going to fight Valentina Shevchenko in the main event of Madison Square Garden. Like, that's the type of fighter Sajara Eubanks was. And Elise Reed had no business being in there with her whatsoever. But that's why it'll be really nice to see her sort of have this reset down at strawweight against someone like Corey McKenna, who, in her own right, is a very interesting prospect because any fighter under the age of, like, 24, it feels like you are going to learn a lot about them every single time they step into the cage. And like you had mentioned to start this video, Corey McKenna's taken a long time off since her last fight. And when you are as young as she is, are we going to see a brand new, completely reinvented version of McKenna? Are we going to see a very similar one? I really do think that there's a massive room for growth and opportunity in Corey McKenna's career because for someone who's as young as she has shown a very strong foundation in mixed martial arts, and I do feel like she has a great foundation to build upon.
Now, there's a lot of different ways we can go about this one. Obviously, we want to give McKenna her shine. I want to give Elise Reed her shine as well. She's a third-degree black belt in Taekwondo. You see a lot of kicks up the middle for Elise Reed. She really tries to pry her opponents off her that way, go side to side. She has great movement on the feet. You love to see it. And a lot of her opponents tend to just chase her around the cage. She's able to really implement the strike and get the win. She went to military college. She served in the Iraq War. She served in Kuwait. She teaches courses in the military. Elise Reed has a very, very interesting background. She owns her own gym at Kickside Martial Arts. You love to see that out of Reed, who, again, in her own right, under 30. The impressive 30 under 30, Elise Reed is
in that
category. To
quote Jay-Z, I'm not a businessman. I'm a business. Man.
And Elise Reed is definitely of that ilk. But for Corey McKenna, this is kind of the crazy thing. And you have to consider this when you look at this fight. Because McKenna is a sizable favorite. Her last fight was on the RDA Paul Felder card. And for RDA, he took a year and 3 months off. And he looked like a bat out of hell. For Corey McKenna, she takes a year and 3 months off. Now, she was booked in fights in between. And that much is true. But the trouble is, and I listened to her interview from the All-Star with JHK. And this was it. 4 month recovery time. She was booked with Emily Whitmire last year. The 4 month recovery time due to an accumulation of damage seemed like a little bit in training, and she had concussion issues. So she's been cleared for the last 5 months to compete, but it was hard to get a fight. And when I look at that for a young fighter, again, good to build some foundational building blocks over with Team Alpha Male, the new adopted gym. She's the second fighter from Wales that I've seen at least recently train there. Mason Jones, the other. So for Corey McKenna, great, great training partners over there. There's quite a few big ones that I've seen on her Instagram. Macy Barber's one, Sarah McMahon's another, but another two. Yan Xiaonan, you're going to work out some of your striking there. And my gal, Vina Janjadova. So you love to see that there. Vina making it tricky over Team Alpha Male. So for Poppins, again, you go back to the fight that she had against Kay Hansen. I thought Hansen won the first round and the third round. It ultimately was a very close fight. Very MMA close. Decisions. 3 had it, 30-27 Hansen. 11 had it, 29-28 Hansen. 2 had it, 29-28 for McKenna. But again, known for her grappling. Really speedy 1-2. Striking defense. She can just kind of leave her hands there and her head on the center line and get struck. So it makes you worry against somebody like Elise Reed, who, no, she struggled on short notice against Sajara Eubanks. Eubanks grappling at 125 is a lot different than McKenna at 115. But when it comes to this fight map, before I hand it over, I bring up the odds. McKenna opened a minus 180. She's minus 230. Elise Reed opened a plus 135. She's plus 183. We'll talk about the topology votes late. I like McKenna in this fight, but the odds kind of scare me off, and the public going towards McKenna, again, just due to the inactivity, concussion issues, so on and so forth. I know she's been cleared for a long time, and there's those room for improvement, but the striking defense just leaves a little bit to be desired.
But I don't think Elise Reed's, like, comma worthy. I can't believe I said comma worthy is enough. I was going to say Chaos Williams, and then I got confused midway through. She's not like a Chaos Williams who can end your night like that. So that's why I don't worry about the striking defense as much for Corey McKenna in this matchup. If she ever gets up to fight like Marina Rodriguez, then yes, that's a conversation that we definitely need to have. But the thing for McKenna, I agree with you. Sojourner Eubanks is a much different kind of grappler, especially at 125. But if I'm Corey McKenna, I'm watching that fight with an awful lot of confidence going into this one against Elise Reed. The difference will be, though, her ability to get the takedown is going to be a lot different than Sojourner Eubanks, because Eubanks can get takedowns from the clinch and from more of like the around the waist positioning, single legs and double legs, whereas McKenna struggles a little bit more with those clinch takedowns. I look at her, she goes for a lot of trips, a lot of single legs. It is good wrestling because she can chain multiple different styles together, which just kind of speaks to how high level her grappling is. But I really do think that if McKenna can get her to a set position on the ground, now, could Reed hit the ground, immediately pop back up? Yes, we see it all the time in fights. But if McKenna can establish that top position, I really do think she's the vastly superior grappler. And the thing is, she may have improved a lot since the last time we saw her. Like, I really do believe that. She was a good prospect when we first saw her over a year ago. And she has had a lot of time to improve with one of the best gyms in the world. And you're right, I worry about the concussions and all that a little bit. But it's kind of like going back to the Bryce Mitchell fight. Like, you had said it when you switched your pick. You were like, I'm going to regret doing this. But that bruise does worry me a little bit. And every now and then it comes back to bite you. So I think Corey McKenna, if the concussions aren't an issue, I really do expect her to get a win. But this is the curious thing, I guess. For Elise Reed, do you think she's in like the same category of McKenna as like we're trying to be prospects right now? Or do you think McKenna is trying, they're trying to push her right now?
They're trying to give McKenna a good opportunity close to home, the Wales, the London connection there. But when I look at this one, it's tighter to me than that line might suggest. So again, when you're talking about fighters who are somewhat young in their career, 4-1, 6-1, you have a fighter coming off a long layoff, the injury, so on and so forth. Again, I know she's been cleared for a long time. It still does scare me. Topology votes. Wow. Holy smokes, 497 total votes. I'm not leaving it up to a surprise. 94% McKenna, 84% by decision. I do think McKenna can get the win here, and I do think that this fight could go long as well. Again, a decision against Vanessa Demopoulos, where McKenna had some good opportunities in the striking, actually, in that fight. Made the grappling very competitive, and that is Demopoulos' world. For Reed, can she defend the takedowns? We're going to find that out this weekend, but both of us in agreement with Wales' own here, Poppins, eh?
Yes.
Both of us going with Poppins to get the win. Will she have it popping on Saturday? I don't know,
Brandon,
but a
Whip
big time fight coming up this weekend and a big time card. Let's keep it locked in with Fight Night Picks. We always say, let's get into it. Coming up at Bantamweight this weekend, we have an absolute banger. The Tank, Jack Shore, is going to be taking on Lucky Timur Valiyev. And Timur Valiyev is lucky that the UFC considers the fights that he's had of late as a win streak, because it's not. It's not. He's got a loss to Trevin Jones, who passed a little bit too early before that fight, and now it's a no contest on the record, but a knockout win for Trevin Jones. It's silly business nonetheless.
Barry.
And what did Timur Valiyev do coming out of that? Well, he goes out there against Martin Day and takes down a striker, and again and again and again, and he gets a win there, and it is a good win. And his last time out, he has a majority decision win against Tony Barcelos, which could be a draw if you consider that in the second round, Barcelos is able to knock him down twice. And it depends on what you score a 10-8, but for me, I have it as a draw, regardless of what you say. It is a fight where you get to learn a little bit more about Timur Valiyev, because this is a guy that a lot anticipated to be in the UFC a lot earlier than he managed. And you look at it, he only has two losses on his record. One is to Chris Gutierrez, which is his last loss back in 2016 by split decision. One to Ole Rehberg in his debut in 2010. And since then, all different wins, all different ways. Primarily by decision. There are 11 of them. But for Timur Valiyev, the biggest point, and I want to hammer this one home, Master of Sport in Sambo, International Master of Sport in Pancration, you know, the old slaps on the ground, all different kinds of fun stuff with Pancration. But when I look at this fight, Matt, these guys are matched up so well. It is such an even fight, and it is an absolute banger with Fight Night Picks. Jack Shore, the recipient of not the Fight Night Picks interview curse his last time out. Some big wins for him. Still undefeated. out of Abertillery. I might have butchered that one, but Wales Zone, training at the hometown gym. You love to see it, and a big opportunity for him. Close to home, the Wales-London connection.
My best friend Colby lives in Wales now, fun fact. For Jack Shore, this is a huge opportunity, because, again, we were talking about this earlier. There comes a point in every prospect's career where they can go from prospect to legit contender, and maybe this fight with Timur Valiyev isn't that step, but for me it is, and I'm very honest about that, because Timur Valiyev, although we poke fun at some of his recent no-contest, aka loss, he is a tremendously talented fighter, and it's interesting too, because when you look at what Timur Valiyev doesn't excel at, it's sort of the same area as Jack Shore doesn't too, and that's why this fight is going to be much harder, I think, than most people would anticipate, because Valiyev's sort of a more ironed out version of Jack Shore. Shore put everything into his ground skills and like every single attribute point he has into his ground skills. Whereas Valiyev has a little bit more to offer on the feet, but Valiyev has shown that he struggles with power punchers and guys who can really keep their range on the feet, which Jack Shore really isn't that type of a fighter. So Shore is coming into this fight knowing that there's a weakness to Valiyev's game, but it's never been a strength of Jack Shore's, and that's what... Like, if Shore goes out there and knocks out Timur Valiyev, I will not be able to contain my excitement for him as a contender. Because if you could combine his lights-out ground skills with his wrestling and jiu-jitsu, along with, like, a legitimate threatening stand-up game, then there's going to be few guys in this division who can handle Jack Shore. But when you're fighting a guy like Valiyev, it's going to really test your cardio, because you know he's not just going to fall out in the first round. And it's always going to put you through some kind of adversity, which can be really important for Jack Shore, who is 15-0. Like, in MMA, we don't really know how good you are until you lose a round, or you get dropped, or you go through a bad spot. Timur Valiyev is the type of guy who's going to make you go through some of those tough spots in your fight. So for Shore, maybe for the, you know, bigger mainstream, they will be picking up on this fight. But for me, if he's able to look impressive against Valiyev, I'm ready for him to start fighting sort of the bigger, brighter guys in the division.
There's a few crazy things about this fight that you have to kind of dig into a little bit. So for Jack Shore, 8 of his 15 wins are by submission. 7 of those 8 submissions are by rear naked choke. He loves to take the back. He's very good at it.
He flattens guys out, too.
He's incredibly, incredibly powerful, and his hands have been improving. We definitely have seen that at Shore Mixed Martial Arts, as we saw in his last fight against Ludwig Shalinian, who was supposed to be on this card, unfortunately not able to make it. But the telling thing about both of these guys, for sure, it's the bookings that have fallen out. Khalid Taha, Anderson Dos Santos, Geraldo de Freitas, but more recently, Umar Nurmagomedov. They went, Umar, shuffle the deck, here you go, you get a more favorable fight against Brian Kelleher. And if you look at it for sure, he gets Valia, but then he ultimately becomes, I guess, less of an underdog, if you want to put it that way.
Could Shore almost become, like, the newest Sakuraba? He was the Gracie Hunter. Shore could be the Nurmagomedov Hunter if we do get those fights.
Well, I would love to see it, but for Timur Valiyev, this is the crazy thing. He was a minus 600 favorite against Trevin Jones. He loses. It's an old contest. He loses. Minus 420 favorite, which was an issue for...
Dang, Trevin Jones.
For Trevin Jones, but it wasn't for Martin Day or for Timur Valiyev, I should say. Plus 180 underdog against Barcelos. He ends up getting a fight of the night in that one. I thought it was a draw.
I have a question for you, though. With Barcelos looking, and he didn't look bad in his last fight, but he lost to Victor Henry making his UFC debut, and we were both very high on Henry Barcelos at one point. Does his performance in that fight make you look at Timur Valiyev any differently? Because personally, it does a little bit, because there is the question mark in the back of my mind, if I'm being honest, of, well, was Barcelos sort of past his prime a little bit? Because he was a guy we've been talking about a lot of, if he was 3 years younger, 4 years younger, now he would be going on his run. And for Valiyev, I do feel like he beat a slightly past his prime version of Barcelos.
And the reason why is that the first round was really competitive.
True.
The first round was fast. They were throwing like lightning. I gave the edge to Valiyev. Second round, Barcelos is throwing bombs, drops them twice. And then, yeah, you're over 34. You're going to tire a little bit. And in the third round, Valiyev was able to pick it back up a little bit. So I don't necessarily go that way with it.
Fair enough.
But when we look at this fight here, I mean, Shore opened at Pick'em. He's a plus 138. Valiyev minus 170. So probably the best odds of Valiyev since he's been, I guess, a favorite out of the three fights where he's been favored to win. If we have a look at the Tapology votes, I'm going to say 60-40 Valiyev, so I'm going to say over under 60% Valiyev. What do you say?
I think Shore will be the overwhelming favorite.
So 529 total votes, 82% Shore, 82% by decision. For the 18% that have Valiyev, 84% by decision. Again, a little bit more of a popularity contest. We know that, you know that, everybody knows that with Tapology, but it is always interesting to see where the fans overwhelmingly have the underdog. I know we talked about this, and we've broken it down from just about every angle, but when Jack Shore gets a guy down, you're getting your back taken. And I know the names on the resume in the UFC. Again, Nolan Hernandez no longer there. Aaron Phillips has been scratched from a lot of bookings. Hunter Azure by split decision, he's no longer with the promotion. And Ludwig Shalinian, who I didn't really love on The Ultimate Fighter. I know a lot of people did. And in that fight against Shore, it was just too much too soon. But for Shore, this is the biggest test of his career. So what do you say here?
I think he'll be able to get over this hurdle. I really do. Now, it's going to be a big hurdle to get over because, like we've said, Timur Valiyev doesn't just fall over to anybody. He's a tough fighter no matter what, and he can face adversity and come through it and look really good on the other side. I just think the pressure of Jashford will get to him at one point. And like you said, when Shore gets on top of guys, he makes them pay for it. There's not a lot of inactivity and just a lot of waiting. Like, he's got great ground and pound. He advances past the guard. And those are really the two things I look for in a ground and pound kind of grappling type fighter. Can you get past your opponent's guard, because that is your first big roadblock, and can you effectively get ground and pound off? He checks both those boxes overwhelmingly, so I do like Jack Shore in this fight, but I do agree with you, this is a massive test for him.
And I'm going to talk about this in another one of the matchups coming up, but when I look at Timur Valiyev, he is very, very good at grappling. That is the base, you know, the sambo base, you know, the pancration. And with his striking, switching stances, throwing kicks to all three levels, mixing in the hands as well. I like the complete game of Timur Valiyev, but I look at the grappling here, it's got to be Teflon on Teflon, and you want to be out of there. Oh. You want to be out of there as fast as possible. So split on the pick, but a great fight. And you know, when we're split on one that's this good, it usually delivers as being quite good. So let us know down below in the comments section who you have. Matt going with Shore, I'm going with Valiyev, but I can't wait for this fight and the rest on this card. It is a great one. So keep it locked in with Fight Name Picks. We always say,
let's get into it.
This fight is a hop, skip, and a jump away from the rankings. We have Meatball Molly McCann making that hometown return, or, you know, Liverpool to London, but at least it's in England. She's going to be taking on Luana Dread Carolina, a fighter who I had questions around coming into the UFC, a lot of experience at bantamweight, and so far in the UFC, it's been very, very good. And I know the lone loss doesn't look all that good against Ariane Lipsky. It is posterable, because she got knee-barred, and Ariane cranks on it, yells. The queen of violence. Sometimes it is a lot of fun. But if you do look at this fight, I mean, for Molly McCann, she definitely has a lot of support behind her. Coming into this fight, 4-3 in the UFC since debuting in 2018 against Jillian Robertson. She was the former Cage Warriors flyweight champ coming into that debut. BT Sport is going to have a documentary about her coming out March 15th. So check that one out if you can on BT Sport. I probably won't be able to. But if you look at it for McCann, a fight of the night, her last time out against Ji-Yun Kim. A couple of 30-27s in that one, but it was a lot of fun. And Molly McCann was like yelling to throw down. She brought the fight to Ji-Yun Kim, somebody who beat Priscilla Cachoeira her last time out, but the judges robbed her, and then Priscilla went on a tour of, I get my purple belt, even though all I did was box, and I'm going to have a post-fight interview like I'm a champion. It was the weirdest thing ever.
This sport's the weirdest thing ever sometimes, Craig, and this fight kind of goes into that, because this thing about Molly McCann, she's been in the UFC for a while now. Like, this isn't a new fighter who's only had one or two fights in the promotion. I have to keep on reminding myself that, because every time I think about Molly McCann, it feels like, you know, the women's flyweight division hasn't been around for a long time. She wasn't on The Ultimate Fighter, so it's not like she was in the first wave, but no, it's been years now, and for McCann, it's been interesting, because she's always been billed as this boxer, as a boxer, as a boxer, but I truly do believe that in the area she's improved the most since coming into the UFC, it's probably been her offensive wrestling. It's something she uses a lot throughout her fights, and it's always interesting to see, just because the commentary team loves to say that Meatball Molly has great hands. She is a boxer, but she doesn't genuinely fight like that in the cage. I do think it's a little bit misleading. She does have good boxing, don't get me wrong, and she can strike. But when I think about Molly McCann, I don't think of her as a fighter who can just go out there and beat top-level fighters just with her boxing.
Now, she did, like, her last fight was a well-rounded performance, but her hands got it done for her. But this is the thing. I mean, this is the crux of my notes right here. Wins when pressuring plus wrestling. And if you look at it of those fights, the fight against Cachoeira, you have McCann getting two takedowns. The fight against Lipsky, two takedowns. The fight against Diana Balbizia, five takedowns. The fight against Ji-Yun Kim, two takedowns. But she loves the fight, and when it's brought to her, she can sometimes lose. Again, when she's fighting Lara Procopio, seven takedowns for Procopio. When she's fighting Tyler Santos, I know she's fighting for the title, but five takedowns against. When she fights Jillian Robertson, two takedown against. So when she's winning all of those wins, she's taking the other fighter down. When she's losing, she's getting taken down, and she can get control. Now, the good thing for Molly McCann in this matchup, Luana Carolina is not going to take you down. If she does, it'd be a big surprise. Very long, very rangy for this fight. She's a two-time state champion in Muay Thai, two-time national Brazilian champion in Muay Thai. 88% takedown defense from Carolina. And in that fight against Lupita Godinez, she went 2 of 15 for takedown attempts. Pauliana Botelho went 1 of 4. That was a fight that was really weird. There was some, like, I thought Botelho won, but a lot of people didn't. But regardless of how you scored it, Carolina gets the win. But the weirdest part for me is, can Carolina keep it at range? Can she pump that jab out there? She actually, we say that about tall fighters all the time. Oh, if they only pump the jab out there. Carolina will do it, and it is good. And when she throws that left high kick, it's really good. If Carolina is able to do that, she will be able to get big wins in the UFC. She can beat Molly McCann that way, too. It just matters, can she do it?
It really does come down to the sustainability of that game plan. Because, early on, I think for the first minute and a half, 2 minutes, Carolina might look really good. She'll land some leg kicks, keep this fight at range, and probably look great on the feet. But I do think that every minute that ticks off the clock, Molly McCann's going to get a centimeter closer to her. And another one. And another
good
one.
Good on you for going for Metric, a fight over in the
See, UK. Exactly. I'm trying to appeal to all of our fans. But with Molly McCann, every time she does get closer to Carolina, it's going to help her in her striking and with her wrestling. It really does come down to her pressure. And I can't believe I'm about to make this comp, but it is kind of true and it's just sort of funny. She's almost the female Rafael dos Anjos. Because when she's getting taken down, you're right. Not great defensive grappling. Not great at getting back up off her back either. But when she's the one in top position, she has great ground and pound. She doesn't always pass guard. She will just kind of wait there, for being honest. It might not be the most aesthetically pleasing type of grappling, but she's very physically strong. And once she gets the fight there, she is active enough to where you don't immediately think, oh wow, the ref's going to stand them up. But I do think Carolina's going to start this fight out looking really good. But I do think that as it goes on, I do expect Molly McCann to slowly start to take over.
And if you look at it for Luana Carolina, her last time out, she was getting ready for Sajara Eubanks, and then she fell out on short notice. Before that, it was actually Marina Moroz, then Eubanks. Eubanks is out, and on day's notice, Lupita Godinez, I'll take the fight. And Godinez looked really good in the first round, and then the wheels kind of fell off, because again, it was up a weight class, super short notice, so on and so forth. She wasn't able to get the takedown after that. So if we do look at the odds for this one, McCann open to minus 150 favorite, minus 121 right now. For Carolina, open to plus 130, minus 102 or thereabouts. We have a look at the fan vote on Tapology. Surprise to us, it is to you, but I will say, McCann's a big fan favorite, so I'm going to say over under 67.5%.
I'll say under.
You're going to say under. Slightly over, 514 total votes, 71%. McCann, 89% by decision. For the 29% that I have Carolina, 93% by decision. I think that's a fair play. I bet the decision prop is going to be juiced. For me, I'm going to go with Molly McCann. Luana Carolina, like I said, good kicks, really good job. If she's able to bring it together, I actually considered the underdog in this one, but it's just that constant forward pressure McCann in some fights. Again, Carolina's only lost once in the UFC, so you have to consider that as well. But she gets backed right up, and she's not able to do much out of the clinch. She does have good knees, great Muay Thai background, but I do like McCann and her well-roundedness in this fight, but I wouldn't put this one on any of my cards.
I think Carolina's going to look good until she doesn't. I really do think she's going to have a strong start to this fight, look great on the feet, probably put together a volume really well. But yes, as this fight goes on, I expect Molly McCann to at least get one takedown, because that's the thing. If you're primarily a striker who does go for some takedowns, you're fighting someone who basically has a zero for a ground game. Like, Carolina is really good on the feet, but she hasn't really been able to show at least the ground skills that Molly McCann has. And again, I'm not trying to tell you Molly McCann's some Damian Maia level grappler, but she's at least been able to show those skills at the UFC level. And I do think we are going to see more of the grappling side of McCann in this match.
The last Fight Night Picks lock of the night, Molly McCann to beat Tyler Santos. So take that for what it is worth. But both of us in this fight going with Liverpool's own Molly McCann to get the win. You let us know down below in the comments section who you have, because I think this is a very, very well-matched fight. Very close one as well. And you're not wrong until the result on Saturday. So it should be a big-time fight. We have another big-time fighter from Liverpool as half of your main event, Tom Aspinall, taking on Alexander Volkov. You're not going to want to miss it. Keep it locked in with Fight Night Picks. We always say, let's get into it. We've been spending most of our lives living in a grappler's paradise. We have, not Solomon, it is Mike Grundy taking on Mr. Finland Makwan Amerikani. And for both of these guys, less than stellar in their last and latest runs. And for Makwan Amerikani, the 5-1 in goes back a very long time.
Not really.
It's not the best, though. If you look at it, he takes on Shane Burgos almost 2.5 years ago. He gets finished in that fight. He beats Danny Henry by anaconda choke. Danny Henry of Hakeem Dawodu fame, I guess. That's all we can say for the Scott in that one. He loses to Edson Barboza. He loses to Kamwela Kirk. It was a close fight. And he gets finished by Lerone Murphy in his last fight 4 months ago. That is the 5-1 in for Makwan Amirkhani. He's 33 years old. He has a height and reach advantage in the majority of his fights. Everything is very close in this one. But for Amirkhani, most known for his grappling, and he will go after takedown into exhaustion. And when it gets bad, it gets very bad. But when it's good, it's like when he fights Andy Ogle and finishes him in 8 seconds. Now, for Makwan Amirkhani, a lot of people remember more for the grappling and less for his Masvidal-esque finish from years past. And for Amirkhani, it really was long layoffs, periods of inactivity. That was the telltale sign of his career. If we look at it on the opposite for Mike Grundy, his 5-1 in is much longer than Makwan. Now, a win over Tobin, but 4 years and 7 months ago, he gets that win. He beats Fernando Bruno. That was 4 years, 3 months ago. 2 years and 11 months ago, beats Nadia Romani. He loses to Mavzar Evloev a year and 7 months ago. He loses to Groovy Lando Venata by split decision 9 months ago. The telling thing for Mike Grundy, you know this. You know how good of a freestyle wrestler he was. He is the 2015 IBJJF European No-Gi Lightweight Blue Belt First Place. I'm really digging for that one. And back at the Commonwealth Games in 2014, he was a bronze medalist. But Mike Grundy, if there's anything that you need to know, he's had 3 fights in the UFC. 2 of them went the distance. 1 of them went to 4 minutes and 22 seconds near the end of the second round. That one against Nadir Imani. That one was almost 3 years ago. Like, it's been a while since he's been in the UFC. You just don't think about it. Mike Grundy is 0 of 1 in leg kick attempts in the UFC. All he does is wrestle and throw a heavy right hand. And that's it. That's it.
Now, to be fair, that's probably enough to beat Makwan Amirkhani at this stage of his career. Because in Amirkhani, you had mentioned it, he got off to such a great start to his UFC career. He was handsome. He speaks well. He can, like, he's good at interviews. And then next thing you know, he's getting tired in all of his fights. And it's just become an Achilles heel. It's very reminiscent of when Anthony Pettis fought RDA for the title. I know it was very different. The stakes were much higher. But the second people figured out how to fight Anthony Pettis, everybody knew how to fight Anthony Pettis. Pressure him. Try to take him down. As long as you can avoid his, like, Hail Mary arm bars from guard, you're probably going to have a lot of success. Just don't give him range. Well, to fight Amirkhani, it's the complete opposite of that, to be fair. But still, you know what the game plan is. Defend takedowns. Force him to become a lazy striker. Because other than the few explosions he has here or there, would even be fair to say I just thought of this comp. Like, you hate it when Marab throws spinning back fists. His stand-up's kind of like Marab's, to where Makwan will throw, like, one Hail Mary, I might get a knockout this strike, and then if he doesn't land it, he gets back to this weird sort of high guard, random Marcos-y type stance, and like you said, shoots for panic takedown after panic takedown, and he is a good wrestler, and he is a really good grappler early on in fights, but it affects him so much when he gets tired. It's like, some fighters can fight well even when they're fatigued. We've seen it, like, Brian Ortega, Alexander Volkanovski, 5th round of their fight. I'm pretty sure both those guys are tired, but they make it seem like they're not because they're so high level. Makwan Amirkhani, once he does get tired, it affects every part of his game. It affects his striking defense, his hands come down. It affects his offensive package because he can't go out and get offensive takedowns. So the second Makwan Amirkhani loses whatever gas he has left in his tank, he really is just a sitting duck. And what you said about Mike Grundy is 100% true. He does load up on his punches. He doesn't have a very wide variety of strikes at all. Like, the fact you said, what, he's thrown, what, 3 leg kicks in his UFC career?
He's thrown 1, and he missed on it.
So there you go. He's thrown 1. Like, that's just, you almost have to be making a conscious effort at that point to be like, I'm not going to be throwing kicks. So I really do think this fight comes down to cardio more than anything. Because on the feet, I think both guys are going to be canceling each other out. And it's going to come down to, can Amirkhani take down Mike Grundy? Maybe he can, but I expect his numbers to be like 1 for 13, 1 for 12 type numbers, because I think Grundy defensively can keep this fight on the feet to where his strengths are, and then if he decides to wrestle later on, I actually think Grundy can have a lot of success, because we've seen Amirkhani get out-grappled in fights that he has fatigued in. He's a bit of a front runner. Let's just call it what it is. Like, when the going's good for Makwan Amirkhani, things are going great. But once he does start to face adversity, we've always wondered this. Like, when the going gets tough, do you really expect Makwan Amirkhani to bite down on the mouthpiece and get tougher?
Well, I'm going to say this. I wouldn't hedge a damn thing with Mike Grundy. The only loss
is
Damian Stasiak very early on. And then the last two fights in the Lando Venata fight. Not all losses are the same. So Makwan Amerikani, the majority of people thought that he beat Kamwela Kirk. So there is that going for Makwan. That could be a dub on his record. Then he's 2-3 in his last five. For Mike Grundy, against Lando Venata, split decision is the call. 29-28 Venata by one judge. Judge Patrick Padlan, who I've never heard of. Like, you do not hear a Patrick Padlan very often. 30-27 Grundy. And then the third judge scored at 30-27 Venata. On MMA decisions, 15-30-27 Venata, 5-29-28 Venata, 1-29-28 Grundy. So it is one of those things. He went 3 of 20 on his takedown attempts for 2 minutes and 37 seconds of control time. That's not very good. And he was outstruck 83-34 in that fight.
But in that fight, he was fighting a much more lethal striker.
All Mike Grundy does is just rinse and repeat for takedowns. Against Movsar Evloev, you're going to lose that fight. Movsar is of that ilk. If he fought more often, he would be ranked. Mike Grundy, it's really tough. He's 35. He just turned 35 a couple weeks ago. His younger brother, Jack, just had his first amateur fight. He's going for his second this weekend, so I don't know how the fight's gone so far, but pretty cool to see there. And for Makwan, training out of Loop Martial Arts, the same camp that he had his last fight, also training out of MA Training Center. That's the Makwan Amerikani Training Center. You don't see him out of SBG anymore. So if we do look at the odds for this fight, they open at par. Grundy minus 137 on best fight odds. The comeback on Makwan plus 112. If we have a look at the Tapology votes, they're surprised us, they are to you. I'm assuming they're going to be close. I'm going to say 55% Amerikani over under.
I think I'll say above.
I'm thinking the fan vote's going to be with Amerikani. Wow. 520 total votes, 69% going with Grundy, 84% having to win by decision for the 31% that have Amerikani, 54% by decision, 33% by submission. Mike Grundy over his career, decision, decision. And then you look at the fight against Damian Stasiak, he did get submitted. But the thing for me when I look at it for Mr. Mike Grundy, he is a wrestling specialist when it comes to his submissions. He's going to try and get you in an arm triangle. He's going to try and get into half guard. He might get it by Darce. There are a lot of those. He does have one by guillotine against Michael Tobin. And again, that finish over Nerimani, where if you go back and watch it, Grundy was on skates, but now Nerimani turned off the power, and then Grundy got back into it with a left hook, really it rocked him, sent him flying. It was a wild finish where he was down in that fight. So this fight, it was actually booked back in 2020, but unfortunately, the fight was canceled. Now we get it in 2022. Matt, I know you love it.
I love it, all right. This is a great fight for Mike Grundy, and not really a guy you'd ever think the UFC would be like, hey, here's a great fight for you, but he's on a two-fight losing streak. He's 35 years old. He needs a win. We can all agree to that much. They're giving him Makwan Amerikani, who hasn't really looked like himself, let's just be honest, in a number of years now.
So, took down Edson Barboza on 3 of 6 attempts.
That's cool. Got lit on fire, too, on the feet. So that's my big thing with Makwan Amerikani. I don't think he can make Mike Grundy pay on the feet for being such a basic striker. And then if it does come to the grappling, I don't think he's going to be able to grapple Mike Grundy. Maybe I could be wrong. I've been wrong before. I will be wrong again. But I do think Grundy, at least physically, is going to be able to stay involved a lot more in these wrestling transitions. And I do expect that midway through that second round, third round, if it is a grappling heavy fight, well, that's just going to drain Makwan's gas tank even more. So I do like this fight for Mike Grundy.
We've seen a lot of these guys where, oh, they train with so-and-so, and it really is a tough thing to do. But for Mike Grundy, coming out of Team Cowbon in Liverpool, Mohamed Makhachev started his career there and then moved to Wigan, and he trains at a cage KMMA and whatnot out of Bahrain with the Kingdom. But when you look at it for Grundy, Tom Aspinall in the main event, Darren Till adjacent as well. A lot of big time fighters coming in and out of the gym. I do like Grundy in this circumstance because he never stops. But if you like Makwan, maybe he's able to sync up a defensive submission in this one, and that wouldn't be the biggest surprise to me. So in this one, both of us going with Superman never made any money, saving the world from Solomon. Grundy going with Mike Grundy to get the win. You let us know down below in the comments section who you have. We have some big time fights, including the teammate Tom Aspinall taking on Volkov up at the top. You're not going to want to miss. Keep it locked in with Fight Night Picks, as we always say.
Let's get into it.
The most anticipated debut on this card, UFC London, we have the man himself, 23-0 as an amateur, Two-time IMMAF world champion. He's a European champion in amateur mixed martial arts. He is undefeated as a pro with a no contest where he threw a tough kick to the cup that sent a man screaming in pain. It is the Punisher, Muhammad Makhachev. And listen, like the lion over with Brave CF, I can't do an intro that good. That's why they pay him the big bucks to do it. But when it comes to Makhachev, this is a guy that we've known of since he's an amateur, and you can't say that all that often. You, I, the fans out there, you might know an amateur locally that you're really looking forward to them becoming a pro. It's the best part of going and supporting your local shows. It really is, and I absolutely love it. But for Makhachev, he's been on a giant stage since he's become an amateur at 15 years old. That's the craziest part. He's 21 and 7 months right now. He became an amateur at 17, and he's had one of the wildest journeys to just not only martial arts, but to just everything. To get here, it's absolutely wild. He left Dagestan as a refugee at a young age. I mean, it was back in 2012. His mother passed away, unfortunately. His father took the trek from Dagestan up to England. He was originally out of Liverpool. He started training at Team Calbon. Again, became an amateur. He was the 2014-2015 British Junior Wrestling Champion. Took that fight, moved over to Wigan. You know, Wigan, they have a soccer team. I know that. But when I look at it for Makhachev, again, it's just crazy to see what he's become and how he's been able to round out his skill set. Now, I know that he's going to be billed out of KHK MMA, out of the Kingdom of Bahrain, and obviously you've seen the connection with Brave, but the impressive things that you've seen out of Makhachev and the fact that he's one of those fighters where he has so much experience as an amateur to translate it into a pro, he's a guy that looks like a finished product very early on in his you know, MMA career. The one thing that you worry about, does he become an Eric Silva? Does he become an Eric Koch? We don't know that yet, but I absolutely love what I've seen, and it was some of the most fun tape study to do looking at his career.
Do you know what comp I'm going to bring up, though, as a potential worrisome, wow, really flashy talent? Could be a Mark Chakassy. Now, they don't fight in the same way, but anytime you do have someone who's known for some of those wild techniques who can get a really flashy finish, you do worry that just sort of the traditional basics are going to be their downfall eventually. Now, with Cody Durden, it's going to be really interesting because he's had a mixed run in the UFC up until this point, so you don't even have, not that you don't have the best say on him, but you're going to learn a lot about Durden in this fight too. And for Makhachev, you really hit it on the head. He's not just well-developed for being young in his MMA career. He's only 21. Like, he's young in his career. Like, we were talking earlier about the Corey McKenna fight and how, hey, she's really young and she can improve a lot in a year and a half, 2 years. Makhachev's a more refined talent than she is, by far, if we're being honest. And he's still younger than she is. Like, this is really one of those cases where you're a prospect coming in who already looks this eye-catching and this good, and they can still improve quite a bit. But with Makhachev, you mentioned a little bit before we started filming, so I don't want to completely take your point.
Please don't.
He's very good on the in-betweens, though, and I will let you get more to that.
When you look at it for Makhachev, he can strike. It definitely isn't the best part of his game. It's good, but it's not the best part. He tends to take a little bit of time off when he's judging distance at the start of a fight, which, again, you're cerebral, you're well-conditioned. That looks great. I love to see a prospect.
Normally, young
that.
Fighters are far more over-aggressive than anything, so I think that's a great point.
That much is true. I mean, we even saw that. Terrence McKinney, you got to blow your load early when you're taking on a guy like Drew Dober. We saw that last weekend. Almost finished him a couple of times, but for Makhachev, takes his time, really gauges things, throws a lot of kicks out there. He's a little lazy on some of his leg kicks from distance, but by and large, he has a great game that way. His boxing, definitely probably the weaker area of his game, although it still is very good. But when he does engage in some of the striking, he leaves himself out there, head a little high. He can get hit. But when he brings in his wrestling, the guy is relentless. And on some of those in-betweens, I mean, you go back and you look at some of the fights, but the two fights that really stand out to me for Makhachev, obviously Yamaguchi, when he's fighting as an amateur, he beat him three different times, twice, four titles. But the two fights that I really do like, the Glenn McVay fight when he became a pro, he wins that one by decision. But on those in-betweens, bop, he's landing a good shot up top, or he's landing that left high kick. That is really good. And against Abdul Hussein, who is a guy that I've talked about on this channel, you might have seen it in some of those in-betweens of the channel, some of those content pieces, but Abdul Hussein, 2016 IMMAF World Champion coming out of Finland, he is still an impressive talent that you have to watch, very, very well-rounded. In the in-betweens, Makhachev's got him up against the fence, breaks, and as he breaks, spins and lands the left head kick. No guard there from Hussein. Like, it's amazing to see that one. The Ibrahim Navruzov fight is the one where he kicks him straight in the cup early on in the fight. Navruzov,
I immediately thought of John Dodson, because for some reason, John Dodson's been kicked in the cup more than any other UFC fighter, I think. Weird nugget that I thought of when I was watching that.
But it was kind of crazy to see that. But again, when I go back and I look at this fight, it takes two to tango, and you want to talk a lot about Makhachev, and he is a very fun prospect to watch. For Cody Durden coming into the UFC, I didn't anticipate big things. He had one event where he fought in kickboxing, boxing, and MMA in the same night, which is impressive, but...
Is that known as a Bob Sapp?
I guess, yeah. I mean, or yeah, like a Mayhem Miller. Like, it's cool. It's cool when you do entrances like that. It's cool when Bob Sapp does wild stuff. But for Cody Durden in the UFC, he's not expected to do much against Chris Gutierrez in his debut up weight class. And then he 10-8s him in the first round and gets beat in the second rounds, and it ends up as a draw. So his next time out, he fights Jimmy Flick, and he still wants that fight, even though Flick retired.
That was beautiful.
And he gets beat up and submitted fairly quickly. Then he fights Archie Long, and it's a close fight. Like, it really is. Durden wins the fight, but it's a close fight, and then he wants more out of it. But now he draws a prospect. It is an odd one for Cody Durden because his wrestling is there. And he's one of those guys that's just going to go takedown, takedown, takedown. When it's in the it's on the feet, it's a lot of 50-50, a lot of swinging with power. But Durden, to me, I have to say this and give him his due. I think he's a lot better fighter than the guy that I thought was coming into the UFC. And hopefully
I think that's very fair. I really do think that's fair. Because with Durden, you're right. He has good wrestling, but it's going to be really interesting to see if he can get his wrestling off early. And I'll be curious to see who decides to shoot for a takedown first. Because I don't think either guy is going to be able to win a lot of fights at the UFC level just with their stand-up going out there winning rounds and moments. So they're going to need the wrestling at some point. I'm just curious to see who feels more comfortable with their stand-up. Because if Makhachev's feeling himself on the feet, I could worry a little bit, if I'm being honest. If he does get a little wild, if he does start to tire as this fight goes on, Cody Durden is quite relentless. I know he had a good first round against Gutierrez, and then he got tired as that went on, but that was a case where he thought he was going to get a finish early, so you can kind of forgive him a little bit for not having the greatest gas tank as that went late. But I do like Makhachev, and like you said on the in-betweens, and I am glad that you mentioned that, I think there's going to be a lot of that range in this fight. I don't think these guys are going to be in open space very long. I know I said I'm curious to see who feels more comfortable on the feet, but I don't think either guy's going to be overcomfortable on the feet. And I do think Makhachev is going to be able to make Durden pay, maybe not with massive shots in the clinch, but those things do add up, those rabbit punches. I always go back to when Ben Askren fought Damian Maia, and Ben Askren doesn't have good stand-up at all. Damian Maia looked really good on the feet against him. But Ben Askren, just by walking forward, threw all these little, like, rabbit punches that had accumulation on Damian Maia's face. I think Makhachev could have a similar type of game plan to where it's all the little things that really add up over time, and I think that's why I'll be able to get the win.
For Durden, two-time high school state champ in wrestling, he went 121-31 overall. And again, I look at him, you look at the fight that he had his last time out, 30-27, 29-28, 29-28, but again, some very long entries. Makhachev will actually do that as well. Just shoot right across the cage and go for it. Works sometimes, and when it doesn't work, it can be really bad, but both of those guys tend to have that. So I can see Makhachev getting out of some of those bad positions and defending some of those takedowns from Durden. I'm going to look at the Tapology votes first because I anticipate over 90% of the fans are going to go with Makhachev. And we have a look there. Oh, it's very close. 527 total votes, 88% Makhachev, 24% by decision, 62% by submission. For the 12% that have Durden, 77% by decision. We look at the odds. Makhachev open a minus 180 favorite. He's a minus 338. Again, best fight odds. It's an average. And for Durden, he opened a plus 155. He is a plus 257. So again, we set it up for both of these guys. I think Durden has an all right shot in this fight. It's just going to depend on how his gas tank holds up against Makhachev. I think Durden, he's really, really odd with the way that he throws his punches and his shots because he comes in with a lot of power. I do think Makhachev is going to have some of those defensive. He is very, very speedy getting out of the way. He's very good at defending kicks, which is a big part of Durden's game, actually. Might come as a surprise to some people, but Makhachev is good at jumping back out of the way. He doesn't really check them all that well, but he has the movement to defend. So I do like Makhachev in this fight. I'm really looking forward to this one.
I think if Makhachev's on his back, it's not a life or death situation. He can work out of that position and then even end up on top or get up to his feet. If Cody Durden's on his back, though, I do worry about his ability to then get back up to his feet and to really be able to outwork some of those positions. So that's why I like Makhachev in this. And here's the thing, too. For a prospect being this refined at 21 years old, we might have a very promising young prospect on our hands.
Oh, there will be Khabib Nurmagomedov comparisons. That much is true. I am really eager to see this fight. Both of us going with Muhammad Makhachev in this one, the Punisher, to get the win. You let us know down below. Are we wrong? Do you have George's Cody Durden? Let us know. Dan from Best Fight Picks might. We'll see what happens there. But a big time slate of fights coming up, and Volkov taking on Tom Aspinall in the main event. You're not going to want to miss this. Keep it locked in with Fight Name Picks. We always say, let's get into it. Big time fight coming up this weekend. We have Wolverhampton's own, the Black Country banger, Jai Herbert, looking to make it two in a row, taking on the Georgian Spaniard. You know him as El Matador. It is Ilia Topuria hopping up on short notice at lightweight. And for Topuria, it's been a little bit of a disappointment. Now, we're going to take this in a little bit of a different direction because he's 11-0 in MMA. He's a finisher.
As disappointing as like one of the bright young stars in the sport can be.
He's a finisher to the nth degree. He picked up a big time win as a decent favorite over Ryan Hall's last time out. But the disappointment comes in the fact that he was supposed to take on Mazhar Evloev a few months ago, back at the end of January. Now, Evloev withdraws from that fight, and then Topuria can't make it to the scales to take on Charles Jourdain. So that's where my disappointment stands. I would have loved to have seen the fight against Evloev. I would have loved to have seen the fight against Charles Jourdain. And depending on where this fight truly falls on the card is where we'll get a standpoint of, okay, just where is Ilia Topuria when it comes to the good graces of the promotion. But what I can tell you is he does draw a bit of a favorable matchup against Jai Herbert. Now, for Herbert, this guy, former Cage Warriors champion, you absolutely love to see it. And I have it in my notes. This is his first fight since Cage Warriors 109 to take place back in London. And that is what you love to see. To take place back in England, I should say. That was October of 2019. And for Jai Herbert, I listened to an interview that he did, and I want to make sure I give credit where it's due. We talk about that all the time with Abs Talks, where he said, if you look at my opponents compared to his opponents, there's no comparison really. Don't compare your opponents to other people's opponents. That's the worst thing you can do, Jai Herbert.
So I don't know about that.
I don't necessarily love it. For Ilia Topuria, he should have been a Cage Warriors champion at bantamweight. Missed weight big time against Brian Boulon. Those guys actually fought on the same card on that night. For Topuria, got a little bit more seasoning outside of that promotion. He's a guy that bounced around from promotion to promotion. I love the camp that Ilia Topuria has for this fight at Clement Club, training with Guram Khatataladze and Merab Dushvili and his brother, younger Topuria. We saw that even tonight. I say tonight, we're actually taping on Saturday, the fact that Javid Basharat, his brother, picked up a giant win. Mike Grundy,
I love that he gave his brother shine, too. He was like, yeah, yeah, tell me, like, no, get him in the UFC, too.
And Mike Grundy, his brother, just became an amateur. He fights this weekend, too. So really cool to see these guys who have brothers in MMA, training, fighting, winning. Now, Matt, when it comes to this fight, this is a style versus style fight. Jai Herbert knows that. Ilia Topuria knows that. Jai Herbert has lethal stand-up. When he can bring it together, we saw that in the regional scene. We saw that in his last fight against Kama Worthy. Ilia Topuria can box, mainly known for his grappling and how great he is. But if you look at his fight against Damon Jackson, got it done on the feet. If you look at his fight against Ryan Hall, he pounded him out like a cheap Sunday morning.
Wow. For Ilia Topuria, you did mention it early on in the video. This is an extremely favorable matchup for him. And I do worry a little bit about him fighting at lightweight now, because you had mentioned it. He missed weight for a bantamweight fight. And now he's fighting at lightweight. That's a little concerning. Like, people don't normally make two jumps up in weight. And I understand it's because he had those weight misses, or the weight issue, I should say, in his last fight. But that is a little weird, because I think if you've watched him compete, frame-wise, he doesn't fit into this division at all. Like, I couldn't imagine Topuria fighting, like, the top guys at 155. I know Charles Oliveira fought at 145, but think about how much bigger Charles Oliveira is than a guy like Topuria. So I do think that he will go back down and do his best work at 145. But this matchup, I was saying it before we started filming, this reminds me a lot of when the UFC made Calvin Gastelum move up to 185 initially, before he did it against Tim Kennedy and went on his run, when he fought Nate Marquardt. And it was a really sad fight. Marquardt was very much past his prime. But Calvin beat the brakes off him. And it was a case where you have one guy who is supremely skilled and in his prime against another guy who his best areas might be able to cancel out some of the younger guy's best areas. But if I'm only working at my strengths, and if my strengths are 50-50 with you, what's my plan B going to be? And that's what I worry about with Jai Herbert, because like you mentioned, is his stand-up good? Yes, it's very good. Has explosive hands, can put his combinations together really good. But he has a double-edged sword on the feet, and it's that he's not the most durable guy in the world. And Alistair Overeem proved that in his heavyweight career. Alistair Overeem, technically, is one of the greatest strikers ever. Big Ben Rothwell knocked him out, though. You know what I mean? Just because durability, when it's not really at the level of your striking, you can fold to some lesser fighters sometimes. And with Jai Herbert, I do worry about him eating the power of Topuria, even up a weight class from where Topuria normally is. And I know we're going to talk more about Topuria's grappling, but the way I look at this fight is, it's going to be fairly 50-50 on the feet. Ilya can put together his boxing combinations extremely well, and I do think defensively on the feet, he's smart enough to where he's not going to get caught by a big shot early. And the second this fight hits the mat, and I mean the second it hits the mat, Topuria's not the type of guy who's going to sit in your guard and let minutes go by. He's going to try to pass, put pressure on you, really make things uncomfortable on you in the bottom position. So just for Topuria, okay, on the feet, if everything's not going your way, I still think you have a chance to win rounds against Jai Herbert. And on the mat, I don't really think Jai Herbert has the continual success in grappling to really be able to hang with a guy like Topuria.
This is one of those fights where a lot of people might tell you, Ilya Topuria, he's the hottest prospect in MMA. I think he is right one now. Of them, honest yeah. to goodness, I think he's one of the hottest prospects in MMA. I'll counter that with Jai Herbert because early on he has to establish the reach, he has to establish the size, and we talked about it. You've got Ilya Topuria, who used to compete at 135, in this fight at 155 against Jai Herbert, who's 6'1", and has a massive 8-inch reach advantage. And for Jai Herbert, his takedown defense is his downfall. You look at the fights that he's had, though. Francisco Trinaldo went 2-of-3 on takedown attempts, cold cocked him, knocked him out. Herbert's got that hand up there, and Herdeen decided, I'm going to let this one simmer
a little
bit.
That was a beautiful knockout by old man Trinaldo, though.
And for Renato Moicano, he went 5-of-7 in his takedown attempts. So if you do look at it, not great takedown defense, 30% in the UFC out of the three fights. He's 1-2 in those fights. But you look at it, he trains out of Team Renegade BJJ, a gym that I brought up time and time and time again on this channel because Arnold Allen's at the gym. Tom Breeze is at the gym, who's got a fight in the main event of Levels Fight League. Middleweight title. You might not have known Tom Breeze was no longer in the UFC, but he is, and he's got a fight right there. So I look at this one as Jai Herbert. He's trained there for a long time, and it's one of those things that we just haven't seen his offensive and defensive grappling kind of press up to the challenges that we've seen. For Ilya Topuria, again, it is his bread and butter, and so it is kind of tricky. Again, in that Bulan fight, he missed weight at 139.5. We knew 135 might not be the division for him, but you don't like to see young guys miss weight that much.
No.
So when it comes to a fight like this, we look at the odds, and Topuria opened to minus 500. He's minus 390 right now. For Herbert, opened to plus 375. He's plus 295. We have a look at the Tapology votes very early on. Surprise to us there to you, Matt. But I will hedge it, and I will say, Ilya Topuria, I'm going to say over under 87.5%.
I'll say over.
I'm going to say over. We have a look at the votes. Wow. 452 total votes, 94% Topuria, 9% by decision, 18% by submission, 67% by knockout. Sometimes the math doesn't always shake out. The 6% that have Herbert, 57% by knockout. Matt, I do think Ilya Topuria will win this fight. I hesitate a little bit, again, with that length. Jai Herbert, not necessarily the biggest leg kicker, but when his boxing is on, he's great at it. Double jab, pumping that out there, throwing that right hand like he can. Jai Herbert has a great opportunity as an underdog in this spot. I do like the complete game of Topuria, and the guy does not stop trying to take you down. I think that's going to win it for him in this one.
I 100% agree. I don't really think Herbert has an answer for the grappling of Topuria. And the thing about Ilya is that if he is able to get his weight under control, I truly do believe he is destined to be at a minimum a top 10 featherweight. Like, that is the ceiling. And even that might not be giving him the full credit he deserves because that's the kind of special talent he is. But you got to get your weight in order because even think about this weight class, or at 145, Yair Rodriguez, Max Holloway, like, these are huge fighters who, if they moved up to lightweight, okay, physically, maybe they would be able to hang with some guys, but even they would be undersized. Ilya Topuria is not even a big guy for his own weight class, so I do worry about him a little bit with the size, but really the size is the only hesitation I have about him in this fight. I think he's the much more skilled fighter.
Some hesitations from both of us, but we are both ultimately going with Ilya Topuria in this fight. You let us know down below in the comments section who you have, and a lot of explosive matchups on this card, headlined by Volkov versus Aspinall. You're not going to want to miss it, so keep it locked in with Fight Night Picks. We always say, let's get into it. Like Coach K, like Mariano Rivera. The Paul Craig retirement tour commences in 2022. He said he wants to retire before the age of 35. He wants to go on a final title run, and he will start that off by taking on the miner, Nikita Krylov. And for Krylov, his family has a long history of mining, so he switched the nickname to that. And for Krylov, he was one of those guys that in that original UFC run, he has a first round knockout win over Walt Harris at heavyweight. How crazy is that? Like, it's insane. For him, too, I mean, he's got a wild striking base. He throws really unorthodox kicks. He's one of those guys that really does bring it together, though, with his grappling. And he is a powerful, powerful grappler. Now, offensively, he's great. Defensively, he can be bad. But if you look at it for...
borderline awful, I would say.
If you look at it for Krylov, his last win over Johnny Walker, he goes out there and mauls him. And he puts on a great three-round performance. You look at the five on in, it is 2-3, but a loss to Jan Blachowicz by submission. A win over Ovince St. Preux, the comeback, because he got Von Preux the first time. And then he goes out there and finishes him. And nobody loves an Ovince St. Preux rematch like the UFC. Let's give him Shogun twice. Let's make that happen. Same as Paul Craig. Let's give him Shogun twice. You look at another loss to Glover Teixeira by split decision 2.5 years ago. Win over Johnny Walker. And a loss to Magomed Ankalaev, who's in the co-main event this weekend. For Krylov, it has been a lot of tough tests throughout his career. I know he has a loss in his debut to Soa Paleli up at 265. But when we focus on the losses that Krylov has in the UFC, I mentioned the other ones. A loss to Misha Serkinov as well. That was his big stepping stone to get moving. But some good wins as well. I mean, a submission win over Marcos Rogerio de Lima, a win over Francimar Bajos, a win over Ed Herman, Stepan Bakovic when he left the UFC, Fabio Maldonado to get back into the UFC. It has been a long, winding career for Krylov. I've seen on the Instagrams where he's training with Sergey Pavlovich for this one, so very interesting. But for Paul Craig, Matt, before I hand it off to you, the guy started his UFC career at 2-4. He's 4-0-1 since then, and I read an interview that he had with the Daily Record where he said he wants to win this fight and then take on Anthony Smith as part of that retirement
tour. I'd be concerned if he didn't start that out by saying, I want to win this fight, but continue.
That's true. He's training at the Scottish Hit Squad gym. Dan Hardy a part of that? Oddly enough, so it's neat to see, but you do love to see that out of Paul Craig. He's really turned his career around from the draw against Shogun to brutalizing one of my childhood idols. And then
quit.
For Paul Craig's last time out, dislocating Jamal Hill's elbow. We know how hot of a prospect he was, but he flew too high close to the sun, believing in his own grappling before that fight. I do like this fight, though, because you anticipated to get into the grappling?
100%, but I'm going to throw some red flags up really quick. You sold the people on the Michael Olashaychuk version of both guys. There's a lot of negatives that we should probably get to about both of these fighters, because there's a way that you can describe Nikita Krylov where he does sound amazing with his striking and with his grappling. There's another world, though, where he's not very good in either one of those areas, and Krylov is a really interesting fighter because offensively he is so dynamic, but defensively he leaves so much to be desired, and it really is interesting when it comes to the grappling, too, because normally, if you're just good at grappling, you're good at grappling across the board, especially when it comes to submissions and jiu-jitsu. You find less people who struggle offensively and defensively with their jiu-jitsu than you would someone with wrestling. There's a ton of fighters who are very good offensively with their wrestling, but they struggle defensively with it. Normally in jiu-jitsu, you just sort of excel in grappling in total, like Paul Craig does, for instance. But with Krylov, he has these weird sort of bouts of inactivity almost on the mat, where he, I don't want to say it's a low fight IQ thing because he has a lot of wins by submission too, but he almost gets lackadaisical in some positions. And when you're fighting a guy like Paul Craig, that's the last thing you want to be. Like, Paul Craig, again, is he a good striker? Not really. Is he a powerful striker? Kind of. He's a big guy, and if he hits you clean, he's going to put you down. Ask Vinicius Mojea how that went. But he lost
one of the worst fighters we've seen.
Exactly. He lost all of his fights by knockout. But the thing about Paul Craig is, and I'll touch on this really quick, it sucks that he's going to retire by 35 when it feels like he's starting to get into a rhythm right now. Because you're right, he went from fighting Shogun to a draw, and then fighting Shogun to where they didn't even look like they belonged in the same cage together.
He made a legendary striker tap due to strikes.
He did. A legendary grappler, too, in Brazil, Craig.
That's enough.
But We can't disrespect Shogun that bad on this channel. If this does become a grappling fight, though, it becomes Paul Craig's fight to lose, because even against Mega Man Ankalaev, who's a very good grappler in his own right, Paul Craig was able to show submission skills at that level. And that's what I'm trying to get to when we talk about things like quality wins. Submitting a UFC fighter is one thing. It's a very difficult thing to do. Submitting Ankalaev off of your back with a triangle choke in the third round is one of those extremely impressive submissions that few people have on their resume, and that's why I do think that if this fight hits the mat, it's going to be all Paul Craig all day.
And MMA math suggests that Paul Craig wins because Ankalaev just beat Krylov and Paul Craig beat Ankalaev, but not all things are created equal. The weird thing, if you look at it in terms of camps and whatnot, Nikita Krylov used to always be billed out of Tiger Muay Thai. He had a lot of crossover with the American Top Team. Doesn't seem like he's training there anymore. Coming in with a salty record of late, much younger in this matchup, 5 years younger, and he is a big time guy in this division, former heavyweight when he came in at 21, making that UFC debut all those years ago. So if we look at the odds for this one, Krylov opened an average plus 134 on best fight odds. He's minus 176 right now. Paul Craig opened a minus 155. He is a plus 143. Nikita Krylov, the biggest mover and shaker on this card so far at a 58% clip. If we have a look at the Tapology votes, going to be a surprise to us, they already do, but I'm not going to say over under. I just want to see these. Look at that. 496 total votes, 72% Craig, 78% by submission. For the 28% that have Krylov, 54% by decision, 35% by knockout. For the 54% that have a decision, Nikita Krylov has 27 wins. One of them is by decision. It's against Johnny Walker, and it's a second-to-last fight. Kind of crazy that he only has one decision win. So I look at this fight as Paul Craig just continues to really refine the things that he's already good at. His takedown attempts can be a little wonky. He baits you into some of these grappling exchanges. He could very well do that this weekend. Matt, I love the fight. I think style for style, these guys are a lot of fun. Who do you have in this one?
Paul Craig to me is like Brook Lopez. Now, I know Brook Lopez hasn't played this year. He had back surgery before the season. He was a big part of the Bucks finals run. A lot of people don't give him the credit for it. Big Brook Lopez guy over here. But he knows what he's good at, and he just does it. He can block shots. He can shoot the long ball. He's got some nice post moves. But now that he doesn't have to be the superstar, he can just focus on his strengths and not on everything that is in the game of basketball. That's kind of Paul Craig. He knows he's not a good striker, so he doesn't try to strike with guys. He realizes where his avenues are to win an MMA fight, and that's what I like out of Craig, because the thing about Krylov is, do I like his striking more than Paul Craig's? Of course I do. Do I like, and this is going to sound wild, the more consistency and the more well-roundedness of his game? I do. But I have no idea what version of Nikita Krylov is going to show up on fight night, where Paul Craig might win, he might lose, but at least I know what version of him I'm going to get, and for that reason I'm going to pick Paul Craig.
That's why I have Goldilocks that with some of these picks here lately, like Carl Robertson and the like. If you look at it for Krylov, I like the well-roundedness of Krylov, and with Paul Craig, I always go back to that fight that he had against Alonzo Menifield, where we're going to throw a lazy spinning attack, give myself up, get hit, and get hit hard. And I look at Krylov as the much better striker, like it that he's training with Pavlovich, at least getting that look in here of the striking. When it comes to grappling, Paul Craig is so well-refined. Nikita Krylov can leave his neck out there, he can leave himself exposed, like, it is a huge liability. So I say it with not the most confidence, but I do have Krylov in this fight. But again, when we're split on these picks, I can see this going one way or the other.
This is why I like Craig in this fight, though. This is my big point. Every Nikita Krylov fight ends up on the mat at some point. Unless he wins early by knockout, the wrestling really is a part of his game, and I just don't think you ever want to grapple with Paul Craig. There are so many other things in the world of MMA that are better ideas to do than grapple with Paul Craig.
Well, like buying $35 t-shirts at events.
Exactly. Like, did you see those, like, cushion pillow things that they were selling for, like, $60 on UFC.com? Just don't go to the UFC store. It gets upsetting very fast. What I'm trying to say, though, is Krylov does find himself grappling at some point throughout the majority of his fights, and I just look at Paul Craig as the type of fighter that you don't ever want to mix in your grappling with.
I have 7 of those pillows on order, so wow. I take offense to that. But no, we're split on the pick in this one. I've got Krylov to get the win, Matt going with Paul Craig. It should be an interesting fight nonetheless, and you let us know down below in the comments section who you have in this fight and the rest of them. It is a big time card coming up from London. Aspinall taking on Volkov in the main event. Keep it locked in with Fight Night Picks, and as we always say, let's get into it. If you're a true fan of Fight Night Picks, you will get quizzical about this fight. We have Shamil Abdurakhimov taking on Sergey Pavlovich in a battle of ranked and unranked heavyweights, because For both of these guys, their last wins in the UFC Octagon date back to 2019, and until last week, they were both ranked in the UFC, and I've had my gripes about Sergey Pavlovich being ranked in the UFC because since he made his debut against Alistair Overeem, where he lost in a fight that he shouldn't have been matched up in 3 years and 3 months ago, he went on to beat Marcelo Gomes by knockout, no longer in the UFC, and Maurice Green by knockout, no longer in the UFC.
Boss?
He was ranked in the UFC for about 3 years without winning. And he was booked in fights, but he could never make it. Issues with injuries, issues with visas, travel issues, so on and so forth. For Shamil Dirkhimov, though, he's currently ranked 10th in the UFC's heavyweight division. And if we look at that heavyweight division, who's ranked below him? Tom Aspinall, one half of your main event this weekend, Augusto Sakai, Wald Harris, Blagoy Ivanov, and Sergey Spivak. And out of those guys that are ranked below him, only Blagoy Ivanov has survived a stab wound to the heart. He's the toughest man in all of MMA, and you can never take that away from him. But when I look at this fight, Shamil Dirkhimov has suffered from inactivity of late. His last win, Marcin Tybura, 2 years and 10 months ago. He loses to Curtis Blaydes at UFC 242 and looks terrible. Terrible. Now, maybe it was the heat of Abu Dhabi. That might have been it, but he looked bad. So then he takes, 2 years and 2 months off. He fights Chris Daukaus, and he looked a day late and a dollar short in that fight. And he had moments in the first round, but overall, he ends up getting finished. And for me, for Shamil Dirkhimov, it really is. If you think of a guy with a Sambo mentality, it is Shamil Dirkhimov. And I know, he had a main event slot back in 2016 against Derek Lewis. Do people remember it?
I'll bring it up probably too much.
Yeah, but probably not. And when we look at this fight, for Pavlovich, he was very, very active. He beat Kirill Sedelnikov to get into the UFC, you know. Baby Fedor, I don't think he goes by that nickname anymore.
I would hope not.
He always did. For Pavlovich, he's a couple of months shy of his 30th birthday. It's inactivity on his side. He is one of the most bodied up, hulked up looking guys in this division. So you look at this and you go, okay, one guy's over 40 and he's looked a little bit of a step slow. However, had some moments against Daukaus, so we'll give him props. And he's a takedown king. Sergey Pavlovich is the heaviest of handed southpaws that you will see in MMA.
Not a takedown king.
His takedown defense is not great. However, if you take out the Alistair Overeem fight, he's 14-0, and it's not like he's really faced all that much adversity. So I look at this fight as the biggest problem for anybody's parlay if they feel really, really secured with young Sergey Pavlovich. But overall, I mean, you got to kind of hate the fight a little bit.
It's not the best fight the heavyweight division could make. Because here's the thing. The lines are blurred, to quote Robin Thicke from 2012, between unranked and ranked heavyweights at this point. There's just not a big separation between the two. Like, go back to, like, the bantamweights, featherweights, lightweights. There's a big difference between the 15th ranked lightweight in the world and an unranked fighter that you think is very good in the lightweight class. Because it's so deep and there's so much talent that to get to the top, you have to fight, like, basically five or six guys who would be ranked in any other division just to get the opportunity to get into the rankings. At heavyweight, you're just going to be around, and that's pretty much it. And for Shamil Abdurakhimov, you're right, hasn't looked great as of late, but I do go back to that Marcin Tybura fight, and there's a little bit of hope left in me from there, because we know how good Tabora's looked after that fight. That was sort of in his little weird mid-career crisis, if you want to call it. But he looked great in that fight, and he out-Tybura, which does give me a lot of confidence going into this fight, because Marcin Tybura is a much better defensive and offensive grappler than Sergey Pavlovich, and if Shamil can somehow turn back the clock and have a similar performance to that, then you're right, this could be an absolute parlay buster, and Shamil could look amazing. But then you go to his next fight, and Shamil, like you said, is very grappling heavy. You don't expect him to lose a primary grappling fight. Curtis Blaydes out-wrestled him to the point where, like, that wasn't even a TKO because of ground and pound. Like, Shamil couldn't defend takedown attempts and just couldn't get back up to his feet at a certain point. He got absolutely dominated in that fight. And then the next one against Chris Daukaus landed some good shots early on.
Years later, exactly.
But then he gets flatlined pretty bad on the feet because the speed really was an issue. I just think with Abdurakhimov, he's always an interesting test for a prospect because, again, we know what he's good at. We kind of know what he's bad at this point. And for Sergey Pavlovich, there's so many question marks around him that this could be the fight that Shamil turns back the clock on. But I think if Pavlovich can just keep this on the feet, being 11 years younger at heavyweight really does mean something. And I know with the heavyweight division, you can stick around a little bit longer. We see it all the time. Stipe's getting older now. Alistair, the list goes on and on about guys who can get later into their 30s, early 40s and still have success. But I do think age age is going to play a big key in this fight. And for Pavlovich, big step up in competition, going from Marcelo Golm to the likes of Shamil Abdurakhimov. But
no, sorry, Maurice Greene.
Yes, Marcelo Golm to Maurice Greene, then to Shamil. But I do feel like Sergey's ready for that challenge.
I mean, my goodness gracious. Shamil Abdurakhimov open and is still at a plus 235 because I wouldn't touch this one with a 10-foot pole. And Sergey Pavlovich is a minus 275, the fan vote. We won't even leave it up to a surprise. 500 total votes on the nose, 93% Pavlovich, 85% by knockout for the 7% that I have Abdurakhimov, 36% by decision, 48% by knockout. I have Sergey Pavlovich based on the speed and the power. But when it comes to Abdurakhimov, you know the fact that he has that Sambo background in his back pocket. Sometimes he's able to go out there and do that. The last three wins that he has are over Chase Sherman, Andrei Arlovsky, and Marcin Tybura. So again, Arlovsky ages like a fine wine. But I've got Pavlovich in this fight. Again, you go back, you do the tape study, the power's the equalizer at heavyweight, and it gets it done for him to the tune of, 14 wins and the lone loss to Alistair Overeem, where it was way too much too soon. So I've got Pavlovich, but I don't like this fight. Don't touch it.
Yeah, I don't feel great about this one either. Because again, it's a big step up in competition for Pavlovich. I believe he's ready for it because Abdurakhimov isn't prime Abdurakhimov anymore. And even Shamil in his prime was like a 10 to 15 guy, I think. So for Pavlovich, this feels stylistically like a good
Pavlovich's last fight 2 years and 3 months ago. It's pop and popcorn for the boys going with Pavlovich in this one. You let us know down below in the comment section who you have. The return of Iceland's Gunnar Nelson taking on Takashi Sato. It should be a great fight. I can't wait for it. Keep locked in with Fight Night Picks, we always say.
Let's get into it.
And a welcome back to Iceland's Own. In a battle of island nations, we have Gunnar Nelson. He's going to be representing Iceland, taking on Japan's Takashi Ten Sato. And when we look at this fight, it is a lot of fun. There's a lot of different layers, a lot of different ways that you can break this one down. But I got to start with Gunnar Nelson. I mean, he has been away from the cage since 2019. He was originally supposed to take on Thiago Alves, and then he drew Gilbert Burns. It was Burns' second fight at 170. Ends up getting the win by decision, does Burns. So for Nelson, he sits out. Now, he's supposed to be taking on Claudio Silva coming up this weekend in a fight where I think he would have steamrolled my guy Claudio Silva, a guy of mine that I love to watch. He has a win over Leon Edwards. That's what always makes it fun when you watch Claudio Silva. But for Takashi Sato, coming in on short notice, representing Sanford MMA, and a very good quality of training partner for Sato. Obviously, you have Phil Haas over there. You also have the Gilbert Burns connection, so he can draw from that in this fight. But a couple of guys that were there recently training, Luke Rockhold and Kevin Lee. How wild is that? It is an interesting one, though, because when you look at it for Gunnar Nelson, he had one fight left on his UFC fight contract coming into this one, so this would have been the last fight. He re-upped, so I want to give credit where credit's due. I read an article from MMA Viking, and they talked about the fact that, new contract, multi-fight agreement. We heard of an interest from other MMA organizations in negotiating with Gunnar, but Gunnar always had his eyes on the UFC. That was his father. His father is also his manager. Interesting there. But the thing about Gunnar Nelson that's the weirdest, and again, we can talk about the wins, we can talk about the losses. He's tied for number one overall ever in the UFC's welterweight division with submission wins at 6. He's tied there with Demian Maia and Chris Lytle. Obviously, Maia spent time at middleweight as well, so you got to combine them for him. He is number one overall, period, in significant strike percentage at 56.8%. He's also a negative 1.6 striker in the UFC. Significant strikes for and against. So it's weird. When he picks his shots, he's incredibly accurate, but overall, slightly negative. For Nelson, Matt, I know you're a big fan, so it's kind of weird. You got to take
that. I'm not a big fan at all.
You love watching his fights. That's what I mean.
But you're trying to say I gotta take that out of it. I think this fight's very neutral from my standpoint.
You love watching his fights, and you're a good person to talk about this with. His biggest statement win, I think of it as the Alex Oliveira fight, but what would you say?
It probably is the Alex Oliveira fight. You could go back a little bit further, but that's the wild thing about Gunnar Nelson. You always feel like, oh, we fought 6 months ago, and then that turned into 12 months, which turned into 18, which is now going on 2 years, and it just would be nice to see him actually actively competing. The main event win over Rick Story, I know that was a split decision, but that was a really big opportunity for him, and that's the type of fighter Gunnar Nelson was at one point, though. That's the picture I'm trying to paint. He was like a main event fight night star sort of fighter, where maybe Gunnar Nelson's not headlining pay-per-views, right? anything, but hey, we need somebody to co-main event or main event a Fight Night card. Give Gunnar Nelson a call. He has a decent following. But the weird thing about him, and I'm glad that you brought up his striking output and some of the numbers, because his style is very unique. He has a karate stance with very, very low output, like you said, and he doesn't really commit to a lot of his shots. Now, when he does sort of do that, like, build up, like Darren Till, where you get that, like, and then throw the strike. It's almost like a timing thing for him. But I worry about him when he fights the upper level strikers in this division. Gunnar Nelson, to me, I've never really found the best way of describing this, but the highs of his game are very high. He is an ace on the mat. His striking is good in some moments. But then when you take a step back and look at the whole picture, there's a lot of holes in Gunnar Nelson's game. And I bring up Anthony Davis when I think about Gunnar Nelson, because Anthony Davis is a top 10 player in the NBA. He's a top 10 talent in the NBA, but he's never on the court. Sometimes he's unmotivated. Like, there's always something else. If you just look at Gunnar Nelson's MMA skills, he's one of the top 15 most skilled welterweights in the world. I just don't think he's a top 15 fighter in this division, because it takes a lot more than flashy jiu-jitsu and strange striking to really crack that top 15 nowadays. And for Gunnar Nelson, he still is the same fighter that he was in his first little run. And I go back to the Leon Edwards fight, and I know Leon is at the top of this division, and that was a split decision. No, it wasn't. Leon Edwards beat the crap out of Gunnar Nelson. But what Leon did in that fight was he made Gunnar pay on the in-betweens, and he also out-grappled him a lot. And that was the first time we've ever seen Gunnar Nelson get convincingly out-grappled by somebody who, like, Leon Edwards is a good grappler. He out-wrestled Vicente Luque when he fought him, but when you think about Leon Edwards, you don't think about wrestling and jiu-jitsu at the forefront of his game, and he looked pretty good on the mat with Gunnar Nelson.
Yeah, and when I look at Gunnar, do you think Charles Barkley would call him street clothes?
He might, yeah.
He very well could. For Takashi, you look at it, and I mean, it's been an interesting run so far in the UFC. He comes in, he takes on Ben Saunders, finishes him, loses to Bilal Muhammad by submission. Interesting, you know, if you look at it for Takashi Sato, he is a good striker. He's got a really stiff jab. You saw that in his fight against Jason Witt. You see it where he's able to toss the jab out there, follow it up with the cross.
Nice.
Really good straight shots with a lot of pop at the end of them. He is an interesting grappler. And coming into the UFC, I expected, like, hey, this is a guy that takes it to the mat, gets the ground and pound off. He's going to be a great fighter that way. We haven't necessarily seen that wrinkle out of his game. I know he got a takedown against Bilal Muhammad. He had kind of like a hip throw up against the cage, and then Bilal got right back up out of it. But he's able to get that win over Jason Witt, and then he takes on Miguel Baeza, and he gets submitted. That fight was a year and 3 months ago. Obviously, Sato, he lost his father. He was supposed to take on Maki Pitolo. Pitolo out of the fight. Sato weighs in. There's tears. I was emotional. You hate to see it. But for Sato, very, very well-rounded. Much more output when it comes to his striking. So he very well, if Nelson's not able to get the takedown, I can see Takashi Sato easily getting a win that way. And again, I know he's only 2-2 in the UFC. It feels like it's been forever since we've seen him. And yeah, it will be interesting that way. And the other thing I want to say for Takashi Sato, he was originally supposed to take on Daniel Rodriguez back, like way, way back, but he wasn't able to make it. And then he gets Baeza. Baeza's a really tough out. You hate to see it when you lose by submission to him. But in this
fight, he's not the toughest of outs.
In this fight, you look at the odds for this one. Nelson has been inactive for a few years now. Open to minus 300, minus 350. Takashi Sato open to plus 250, plus 270. We have a look at the Tapology votes. Surprise us, they are to you.
Yeah.
271 total votes. This fight on short notice. 90% Nelson, 70% by submission for the 10% that have Sato, 75% by knockout. Matt, I hope Gunnar Nelson shows up ready to fight. Hopefully he's got all the swag and the gear on and not the street clothes. But I do have him in this one.
If Gunnar Nelson's at, I'll say 80% of what prime Gunnar Nelson was, I think he'll be able to win this fight. I do think there is a big skill gap between these two guys. If Gunnar is the fighter that he was sort of before these losses and the layoff and whatnot, and maybe he is past his prime. He very well could be, and they're going to fight this weekend, and we'll get an answer to that. But I do like Gunnar Nelson. On the feet, I think he's elusive enough to avoid some of those big shots by Sato. And I do think that once the fight hits the mat, Gunnar Nelson's the vastly superior grappler.
Big time fight coming up this weekend. I think Japan's Takashi Sato is a great shot coming in on short notice to get the dub, but both of us going with Iceland's Gunnar Nelson to get the win. He re-upped the fight contract. Hopefully he's back motivated and ready coming up this weekend. He was originally supposed to take on Claudio Silva, mind you. We have a big time card coming up. Paddy Pimblett's back taking on Kazula Vargas, Arnold Allen, Dan Hooker in the main event. Volkov taking on Tom Aspinall. You're not going to want to miss this. Keep it locked in with Fight Name Picks. We always say,
let's get into it.
this weekend, we have one of the biggest prospects in MMA, the former Cage Warriors champ. You know him as the Batty. It's Paddy Pimblett, a guy who stood in front of me at UFC Moncton. He was there for his buddy Chris Fishgold. But when we look at this fight coming up this weekend, Kazula Vargas has been brought in to lose three times in the UFC. And listen, you can take that from me. You can look at the fights. Now, he is 1-2, and you don't necessarily love that. But if you look at the odds for Vargas, when he took on Alex De Silva in his debut, plus 230 as an underdog, plus 225 against Brock Weaver, he was winning that fight until it was a DQ. And then he takes on Rong Zhou his last time out. He's plus 200 underdog. So Matt, Kazula Vargas, perennial underdog. And it was really hard to tell what you were going to get because was his offensive grappling to then get into top position to get into ground and pound his best opportunity? Maybe, but his last time out against Rong Zhou, he really did have good output to match with his power, and he had an impressive showing. And I look at this fight, he's 36 and 7 months, so take that for what it's worth against a 27-year-old here. Obviously, Pimblett, the guy out of Liverpool, he has the England connection, he is meant to win this fight. But Kazula Vargas, what we've seen, he was beating Brock Weaver until the illegal knee. He beat Rong Zhou his last time out. He is a guy that wants to spoil a party.
If you're on the UFC roster, though, I hope to God you can beat Brock Weaver. And you should be able to beat Rong Zhou, if we're being completely honest, too. And that's the weird thing about this fight. This is a big step up in competition for Kazula Vargas. And you might not even have that high of an opinion on Paddy Pimblett. And I know anytime we talk about these kind of superstar prospects, if you will, or at least popular prospects, they're polarizing no matter what you say. If I say he's good at grappling, half the internet's going to say, oh no, he's not, Matt, you're just overblowing it. And if I say he's bad at striking, people are going to be like, oh, well, did you see him against Luigi? He looked pretty good there. You just have to be honest when you break down a Paddy Pimblett fight. So let's be honest. Is he a good grappler? Yeah, he's a really, really good grappler.
Look at the Manikivi fight, if you want to see an example of that. Flying armbar.
And a very creative one, too. He's not afraid to spend time on his back because he knows how good his own submission ability is. And I know that's something we both absolutely hate. We mentioned that earlier in these videos. But Paddy is one of those fighters that you do feel some level of confidence with when he is on his back because you've seen him pull off those submissions before and you feel like he always has that ability when he is on his back. His striking has improved, though, quite a bit throughout this run. And up until the Soren Bok fight, it was weird because that was a huge, well-promoted fight by Cage Warriors. He came out on the losing end of that fight, but before that fight, he really was just a grappler, I would say, or that was the forefront of his game. Gets out grappled in that matchup, really gets tired and starts to wear down as that fight goes on.
Muscled.
Exactly. But I would say the biggest improvement Pimblett has made since that loss has been in his striking. There is a level of comfort now that he feels on the feet to where it's not just how do I rush in and get the takedown. He'll actually think about it a little bit more on the feet. And I know his last fight might not be the best example because he does get reckless after he gets hit and goes for the finish. But for the most part, Pimblett will allow himself to sort of settle into the fight a bit. Even though he throws crazy stuff, it's just for Kazulu, this is a great opportunity, honestly, because Paddy Pimblett is a very popular prospect, but I'm not ready to put him in the rankings just yet by any means. Like, we just saw Terrence McKinney, who's awesome at, like, everything in MMA, get beat by Drew Dober, who's not even a ranked fighter right now.
Some referees would have ended that fight.
That doesn't matter, Craig. All it means is it speaks to the depth of the division, where guys who are unranked are, like, beating the brakes off each other in fight of the night style fights. I don't know if Paddy Pimblett is going to get in the rankings. I know his personality is definitely going to help him with that path. But skill-wise, he's really going to have to show me something against Kazula Vargas that I haven't seen before. Because beating Luigi Vendramini in the fight that he had with him, yes, it was a first-round knockout. But that's not telling the whole story if you just play the results game with Pimblett.
That really isn't. For Pimblett, he really sets things up with his kicks. Then he gets his hands going. But sometimes when he lands something, he takes a little bit of a second, leaves his chin up in the air, and backs up a little bit, and that is an opportunity for a guy like Kazula Vargas, who has a win by TKO in the first round, due to a cut, against Jordan Williams, a guy who's a bona fide middleweight at this point. Now, that fight was at welterweight. Vargas is a big guy. Now, he's going to give up a little bit of height, a little bit of reach, but I look at this fight, again, it really is tough. Paddy Pimblett is a big, big favorite. He opened a minus 225. Minus 410 or thereabouts right now for Vargas. Open at a plus 188. He's a plus 308. So like I said, Vargas has been a big underdog in every fight. He was beating Brock Weaver till he landed an illegal knee. He ended up winning against Rong Zhou, a very, very well-rounded prospect. And now he's taking on Paddy Pimblett, a guy who not that long ago was beating Decky Dalton on short notice with Cage Warriors in the pandemic. And a win over Luigi Vendramini. I had Vendramini in that fight. It was close until it wasn't. But Matt, I do like Pimblett in this fight. Again, Vargas is a pretty good grappler, so this is going to be a big test.
So is Julian Arosa, though. And Paddy Pimblett beat the brakes off him, and no one seems to talk about that fight anymore.
Yeah, and Julian's had the wildest career. They'll make a movie about him one day.
Like, Pimblett's best win isn't even in the UFC, and Julian Arosa's a really good fighter. We all know that at this point. Like, yes, there's some faults, but you know what you're getting with Arosa. And to have a win over someone like that, I think if you beat Julian Arosa, you should be able to beat Rodrigo Vargas.
So a big fight coming up this weekend, both of us going with Liverpool's own Paddy Pimblett. The haters will let us know. The lovers will let us know. Everyone will let us know down in the comment section. Let us know. We want to hear from you. You drive the show. It's the best part of it. We have two big fights on this main card. Arnold Allen welcoming Dan Hooker back to 145. And in the main event, Alexander Volkov looking to stop the rise of Tom Aspinall. Keep it locked in with Fight Name Picks. We always say,
let's get into it.
Big time banger coming up in your co-main event. A couple of fighters out of the Commonwealth. We have almighty Arnold Allen, a guy who does not fight very often. It must be a blue moon coming up this weekend.
And he doesn't do steroids. His dad does, but not Arnold. I just want to get that out of the way.
Allegedly.
Well, that's not, out of his words, not me.
Allegedly. Dan Hooker is coming into this fight on an odd skid, and we have to mention that. His fifth to last win, he's able to beat Paul Felder. Sorry, his fifth to last fight 2 years ago by split decision. Did he win it? Didn't he win it? We can argue about that till the cows come home. It's a W on the record. He loses to Poirier in an all-time fight. He gets knocked out by Michael Chandler very quickly. He beats Nasrat Haqparast in a very complete game, and then he loses to Islam Makhachev in less than stellar fashion, I guess, but Islam gonna Islam. He's your next champion. At 155 pounds, for Arnold Allen, if you take away anything from this video, this is it. His fifth to last fight is a submission win over Mads Brunel. Mads Brunel is a favorite this past weekend against Adam Borch in a Bellator main event to decide your number two fighter in the division next to AJ McKee. That's how good Arnold Allen has been. And Mads Brunel didn't have a stellar run in the UFC by any means, but he always knew that there was something there. His ground game is great. So for Allen, he beats Brunel, beats Jordan Rinaldi, no longer with the promotion, beats Gilbert Melendez, no longer with the promotion, beats Nick Lentz, no longer with the promotion. And
made two of them retire, though. Like, he is directly the cause for two of those guys.
And beats Sadiq Yusuf by decision, where he drops him in the first round, did not have a stellar third round against him, and we saw Sadiq come back, have a good fight against Alex Caceres this past weekend. So for Arnold Allen, his last fight being against Sadiq Yusuf, that was 10 months ago. And for Allen, it's just periods of inactivity throughout his career. He is a super prospect. He's been booked against Josh Emmett, Jeremy Stevens in the past. This is the biggest name that he's been booked against so far. And for Dan Hooker, he's moving down from 155 to 145. And he always said the whole time he's at 55, I'm going to move back down to 145. So now he does it. Matt, the takeaway, Can the hangman hang at 145? We're going to find that one out.
It's going to be interesting. Here's the thing. I believe Arnold Allen is of the elite in this weight class. And I don't have any sound evidence to really back that claim up other than just trust me, bro, and just go back and watch some of his fights. But there's more than just a top five fighter in Arnold Allen. He's extremely cerebral and does not get the credit he deserves for that. His defense is amazing on the feet. Not a guy who gets hit clean very often. And I do think that those are two extremely underrated attributes, especially at the top of divisions. Because for Dan Hooker, you kind of mentioned it. He has the crazy fight against Paul Felder, a back and forth wild war where a lot of people thought Felder won at the end of that. A lot of people thought Hooker did. It was a very close fight down the middle, but he ate a lot of damage in that fight. Then he turns around and fights Dustin Poirier. Takes an ungodly amount of damage in that fight too. Then he gets finished by Michael Chandler, and that was the first time where people start to think, hey, is this damage starting to accumulate on Dan Hooker? And it did feel like his next fight against Nasrat was sort of a litmus test as to, hey, has the damage taken its toll on you or no?
The damage, I mean, even the Barboza fight,
that was bad too. But the good thing about that was, at least after he had still had some performances, after those two losses, you were worried, especially after how quick the Chandler loss was. But he looked great against Nasrat Haqparast, and he showed off a lot more of his grappling than I certainly ever thought he would in that matchup. But it was a great sort of comeback performance. Was it the best Dan Hooker's ever looked in his life? Not at all. But for a guy coming off two high-profile losses, fighting someone like Nasrat, who we all know how well well-rounded and just how skilled he is. I thought that was a really nice sound win for Hooker. But you're right, he looked awful against Islam, and there's really nothing you can take from that fight. Islam doesn't fight anything like Arnold Allen whatsoever. And Islam is that type of fighter to where the second it hits the mat, unless you do have like a multiple time black belts on your resume, you're probably going to have a really, really hard time with him. But for Hooker, this is my issue. He was big at 155 pounds. He towered over the majority of lightweights that he fought. I really do worry about him at now 32 years of age, making the return down to 145. He was always big for this weight class. He was then big at the next highest weight class. I do worry about the drop down in weight, especially for someone who, as time has gone on, I do think Dan Hooker, cardio has been an issue for him. Is it an Achilles heel? Maybe that's too far of a stretch, but in most fights where Dan Hooker gets into trouble, he does start to fade in those fights. And as those fights progress, that's when his opponent can take over. Arnold Allen loves fighting in those style of fights. He does not mind starting it out, using the leg kick, using the jab, just putting feelers out there until he can really get into a rhythm, because that's the key for Arnold Allen. When he gets into a rhythm, like Giannis going downhill, or like a lot of other fighters, like we say, he's so hard to stop because he doesn't stop doing what he's really good at. It's like what we said about Paul Craig. Paul Craig knows he's good at jiu-jitsu, so he doesn't go out there trying to fight outside of his means. That's what I love about Arnold Allen. I don't ever think he's going to start fighting like Damian Meyer, start throwing kicks like Yair. He's a steady fighter who's hard to hit clean and hard to take down, and at the end of the day, that's a really hard fighter to beat.
It really is tricky. Obviously, Dan Hooker has the name recognition. He's been there. He's been on the marquee. He's been in main events with Paul Felder, Dustin Poirier. He's fought the bigger name opponents. And if you look at it at 145, do you worry about his chin? I mean, well, before he was losing to Jason Knight, Yair Rodriguez, Maximo Blanco, all by decision, moves up. And I mean, you look at the wins. Ross Pierce, Mark Giacchese, Jim Miller, Gilbert Burns, all by finish before losing to Edson Barboza in hellish fashion. He knocks out James Vick, beats Ally Quinta, and then he has the fight against Paul Felder. So big name opponents, the quality is there. Ken Arnold Allen passed the test. I mean, we're going to find that this weekend. So if you look at the odds, Allen open a minus 158 favorite, average best fight odds, minus 106 right now. Dan Hooker open plus 134, now around a minus 117. You look at it, and if you're a Dan Hooker fan, he's the fourth biggest mover and shaker, minus 36% is that clip. We have a look at the Tapology vote, the fans voting on this one, and 510 total votes, 71% Allen, 88% by decision for the 29% that have Hooker, 67% by decision, 28% by knockout, and a little sprinkle there by submission. Matt, I'm eager to see what each guy looks like in the third round, because like I said, for Arnold Allen, his last time out against Yusuf, he was getting beat pretty handily in the third round.
It was pretty close. And Sadiq Youssef, I would say, is the caliber of fighter who I expect him to rally back in a fight. Like, it speaks more to Sadiq Youssef, I think, than anything. I don't look at that as a negative on Arnold Allen, because if we're going to nitpick, Nasrat Haqparast won a round against Dan Hooker, and I would say Sadiq Youssef is a better featherweight than Nasrat is a lightweight. So guys lose rounds in fights. It doesn't mean anything. That's my whole point. For Arnold Allen, though, the steadiness of his game is something that I really do appreciate. And I do think it's going to give Dan Hooker issues. And I know what you said. He started out strong against Yusuf, drops him, and then Yusuf does look better as that fight goes on. But normally, Arnold Allen builds as the fight goes. And this might not be the best comp, but go to the Gilbert Melendez fight. He destroyed Gilbert Melendez. Chop that tree down. Starts with the legs, go to the body, opens up the head. It's just, you know that with Arnold Allen, he's thinking about what he's doing, and there's always a progression to his game plan. You really appreciate that. This is what I'll say about Dan Hooker. I worry about the weight cut at this stage of his career, and maybe that's why I'm a little bit more down on him than the odds makers are. Because to me, you had a really hard time making 145, so you decided to move up in weight. You're still not having an easy time making 155. That was showed. Remember when he had to fight on sort of short notice with Nasrat? Like, that wasn't an easy cut for Dan Hooker at all. So now you've lost three of your last four and you decide to make this drastic weight cut again at 32 years of age. I just don't think this is the best time for Dan Hooker to be making the return to 145. And that's why I don't expect to see the best version of Dan Hooker this weekend. So that's why I have Arnold Allen.
Dan Hooker is definitely a smart, savvy pick. Again, he has that lineage. He has those big fights. I'm eager to see how the weight cut plays out. But he has so many different methods of victory. And I like Arnold Allen. I mean, as Matt said it, man thinks on job. You like to see that, especially from a guy signing on the dotted line. I like the output out of Arnold Allen. I like the, you know, Teddy Atlas reference of water in the basement with the leg kicks, with the body work. So for me, I have Arnold Allen in this fight. Sick he gives fight, up though. 4 inches in height. He gives up quite a bit of reach. You can see that in the graphic next to us. We try and make it as halfway realistic as possible. So I'm eager to see these guys, especially on Friday. We get the opportunity with question mark kicks to review the pick. It's 2 hours before the prelims, so make sure you tune in for that on Saturday. If you're not already subscribed and haven't tossed a like, now's the chance to do so. But both of us going with England's own Arnold Allen in this fight. And we have a big time main event coming up. Volkov looking to test Tom Aspinall on his rise up to the top. You're not going to want to miss it. Just keep it locked in with Fight Name Picks. We always say,
let's get into it.
Big time fight coming up this weekend in our main event. We have Drago, Alexander Volkov, looking to test Tom Aspinall, a rising heavyweight in your biggest division in the UFC. It might not be the best, but it is the biggest. And for Tom Aspinall in the UFC, a big knockout win over Jake Collier in his debut, a knockout win over Alain Badeau his next time out, a submission win over Andre Arlovski, that doesn't happen very often anymore, and a knockout win in the first round against Sergey Spivak, where he put him on skates and made him look silly defending that initial takedown of Spivak, who we saw recently send Greg Hardy outside of the UFC on a main card of a pay-per-view. So Aspinall gets the biggest shot of his career, originally booked this weekend against Shamil Abdurakhimov. They did a little bit of a reshuffle. Abdurakhimov gets Sergey Pavlovich, and man, a big step up in competition for Aspinall going against Alexander Volkov, a guy who's main evented shows in the UFC, who's been to the top of the pyramid with Bellator in the past, old Czech Congo, a guy who really chin checks guys. Really,
don't worry. I'm very glad you brought that name up. I've got a piece on it.
Really him. Sets, guys away, even at, 45, 46 years old. He is a main event for a Bellator title coming up this spring. But when I look at this fight, I mean, for Alexander Volkov, in his last 5 fights, a loss to Curtis Blaydes, he gets taken down over and over.
How much did he weigh in that fight, though, Craig?
He wasn't thick boy Volkov yet, and he rallies back near the end, knocks out Wald Harris, knocks out Overeem, loses to Ciryl Gane by decision, and his last time out gets a big win over Marcin Tybura. The craziest part about this fight, though, and I know primarily you're going to talk about it as a striking affair with Tom Aspinall. You know the lineage of his striking. He was a main training partner of, and I'm not making it up, Tyson Fury in boxing. Tom Aspinall's bread gets buttered in his grappling, and his dad owns a grappling school, and he teaches grappling. He is an excellent grappler. You saw it against Andrei Arlovski. It wasn't that I'm having, poor success with the striking, so now I got to take it down to the mat. He bopped him on the head, and then he gets it down to the mat, and then he chokes him out. Like, Tom Aspinall is one of those refined prospects that you see. And even at 11-2, you want to do the deep dive on Tom Aspinall's record. The loss to Lukasz Porobiec way back in 2016. Lukasz is one of those guys that pops up on a ton of records. And to Stuart Austin, well, the craziest part about it, with Stuart Austin, very, very tricky, tricky guy on the regional scene. And then he continues to win after that Porobiec loss. So again, finishing guys in the UFC, definitely deserving of this main event slot. It is a big time test, though, to go from Sergey Spivak, who was recently knock, knock, knocking on the door, ranked 15th as of now in this division, to jump way up and fight Alexander Volkov.
And you brought up Czech Congo earlier, so I'll just get this fact out of the bag. For the longest time, everybody who fought in the UFC had one split decision loss on their record. And it maybe wasn't in the UFC, maybe it was in Bellator. It just came at the hands of Czech Congo at some point. Alexander Volkov is becoming the new version of that Czech Congo monster, where it's like, hey, he fought Alexander Volkov because he is now the new litmus test when you are trying to become a ranked, and not just a ranked contender at heavyweight, but a contender that we actually take seriously. Because, listen, if you beat someone like Shamil Abdurakhimov, we can get excited about you, but we still have to temper our expectations a little bit. If you beat Alexander Volkov, it's like title shot or bust. And maybe that's a step too far, but you get the idea. When you beat Volkov, you're in that top five area. And once you hit that top five, you're one fight away from a title shot or you're one injury away from a title shot.
Think about this. The chatter on the Underground Whisper Network, the chatter on Reddit, is the fact that Tai Tuivasa is going to fight Stipe. If Tom Aspinall beats Alexander Volkov, it could be Curtis Blaydes. It's probably not Derek Lewis. It could be Ciryl Gane. Like, that would be the ultimate fight. I thought that was going to be for a title. And it could be. Could be for an interim title. You never know, with Francis Ngannou undergoing knee surgery. So they say on the Underground Whisper Network. But that is the air that you're talking in at that point.
100%. And Aspinall, I do think, is knocking on that door. But the thing is, when you're fighting someone like Alexander Volkov, we had mentioned this earlier, where it's just sort of... it's almost like an exercise to see how much you like getting hit. Because with Volkov, he's one of these rare few heavyweights who he doesn't need a knockout to win. He doesn't really need the takedown to win either, which is weird because at heavyweight, you either have a lot of power or you're a great grappler. But his striking has gotten slower, I think, as he's gotten older. And I do think that we're reaching a point of Alexander Volkov to where the physical degrades are starting to sort of catch up to his MMA game. Let me explain that a little bit. I thought he looked better against Ciryl Gane than he did against Marcin Tybura, if I'm being completely honest with you. I didn't think his win against Marcin Tybura was very impressive. And I know Tabor's a tricky guy who, if he gets that one takedown, you always have to worry about his top pressure. But Volkov didn't throw very many strikes in that fight. And that's the one thing that I do worry about, because with Volkov, that's his X factor at the heavyweight division. He is the volume fighter and the range fighter. If you start to lose some of those X factor qualities, well, he can fight on the inside. He's a great striker, don't get me wrong. But that type of a fight isn't really using Alexander Volkov and his skills to the best of their abilities. And I think that, similar to what we mentioned with Molly McCain earlier, how every minute that goes on in that fight, she's probably going to get 1 inch, 1 centimeter closer to her opponent. Tom Aspinall, I think, is going to have a very similar mindset in this, to where I might have to eat a couple shots early from Volkov, but he's not a power puncher, so as long as it's not a big kick to the body or something.
He's not a power puncher.
Alexander Volkov, I wouldn't say, is a big power puncher for the heavyweight division, would you?
I mean, thick boy Volkov's got some sling behind that.
But they were kicks, primarily, is how he's getting a lot of his finishes done. And you're not going to be able to kick somebody like Tom Aspinall. He's going to be pressuring you a lot with his boxing and threatening with the takedown. So it's going to really turn Volkov primarily into a boxer where, yes, Volkov is really good with his boxing, don't get me wrong. But like you had said at the start of the video, Tom Aspinall's of that degree with his boxing. And the great thing about Aspinall, when Chris Daukaus was coming up the ranks, a similar fighter who had been compared a lot to Tom Aspinall, he fought Shamil Abdurakhimov, looked really good against him, but there were a couple signs along the way. He'd been hit clean a few times in there, so when he fought Derek Lewis and lost, you weren't that surprised by it. With Tom Aspinall, he hasn't even had those negative areas in his fights. Andre Arlovski landed a couple leg kicks against him, but that's really been the only sustained success anyone's had at this level against Aspinall.
Don't try and make an argument for Tom Aspinall and go by the numbers, because it's just silly. Took out Alain Badeau down once. Alain Badeau is not UFC caliber. And if he's still in the UFC, I mean, it is what it is. He just lost to Parker Porter. He beat Andre Arlovski, took him down, and that's it. He has 100% takedown defense. It's not like everybody and their buddy are trying to take... Yeah. I don't even think everybody and their buddy could take Tom Aspinall down, because you're going to get submitted.
How many buddies would it take, Craig, for you to take down Tom Aspinall? Over, under 2.5?
Oh, it'd be way over. I think 20. 20 and a goat. But if I look at Tom Aspinall, incredibly positive strike differential numbers. He knocked out Jake Collier for a performance of the night. I guess that age as well. Performance bonus over Arlovski. Performance bonus over Sergey Spivak. That was definitely the win. Sergey came in on short notice. He looked tentative. He didn't strike. He just stood there like this and got struck against. And then his lazy takedown attempt gets bucked off, eats the elbow, crashes back into the cage, and he gets finished. So Volkov definitely has the quality. I'm eager to see. This is the biggest question mark that I have in this fight, and I'm going to stay away from it. Heavyweights, you know, pop popcorn for me, but Volkov has good cardio. Even at 33, has really, really good cardio. I don't know what Tom Aspinall's cardio looks like in a five-round atmosphere like this. So, yeah, he can sustain a great pace round one, round two. What does it look like in round five? Will he even make it there? It really is tough to gauge it that way. So that's what scares me away from making a set-in-stone, hard and fast pick on this one to add it to a parlay, to get really hot and bothered about it. I look at this one and the odds. Tom Aspinall open as a plus 124. He's a minus 106. Volkov open minus 146, minus 117. Matt, Alexander Volkov should be able to make it this weekend, we think, we assume. So, you know, hopefully we don't have to change up the poster midway through the week. Volkov's Instagram is now private, so there is that. But when it comes down to this one, we look at the fan vote. Surprise to us as it is to you, I'm going to say over under 65% going with Volkov.
I think Aspinall will be the fan favorite.
So, yep, 540 total votes, 68% with Aspinall.
I didn't think it'd be that
18%
high.
By decision, 68% by knockout for the 32% that have Volkov, 62% by decision, 34% by knockout. I think Tom Aspinall has all the tools in this fight. It's just how long can he sustain having a pace with all those tools?
Alexander Volkov backs up a lot, though, and that really does worry me. We saw that a lot in his fight against Taboro. The best version of Volkov is the one moving forward. He can put his kicks together because everything is done at his pacing and kind of on his terms. When he's the one getting backed up, that's when you do have to worry. And with Volkov, he's not a great striker on the retreat. Some guys are really good going forwards and backwards. With Volkov, he really does rely on his crashing forward momentum to get a lot of his strikes off. So I worry about him backing up against the cage, especially if Aspinall gets an early takedown, because like you had mentioned, Aspinall's a phenomenal grappler, but we never really see that side of his game. What if he just goes out there single legs Volkov early on in this fight, and for the rest of the fight is in the back of Volkov's mind where, I can't really let my hands go. I don't really want to throw my kicks because that's not going to get taken to the mat. I think Volkov, he's a very tricky fighter. Everybody knows this. Like, not that the book is out on him, but
Verdum was at the height of his return powers.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
And Volkov just tore that mother down.
Volkov has some very fond memories in London, so that is one thing going for him. But I do think stylistically this is a tough matchup for Volkov. I do like his output and his cardio, and if he can keep Tom Aspinall outside of his own range, I think he'll have a lot of success. But I do think at a certain point, Aspinall's going to get on the inside, hit him with a big shot. And here's the thing. Volkov could knock out Aspinall. He could beat him by decision. I think we could all agree on that. Aspinall could win by submission, decision, and knockout. It just kind of gives him a whole other avenue to take if the fight does end up going to the ground. So for all those reasons, I like Aspinall, although I can fully admit that this is one of those roadblocks that a prospect doesn't always get past.
That much is true, and it's a big ask for Aspinall to go from ranking 11 to jump way up and take on a guy like Volkov. So again, the cardio, I don't know where it's at, and the interesting thing too, Volkov's bigger than most of the guys he fights. Weight is what it is, but height
NBA players.
And reach is always in the court of Volkov. And it is in this fight, but it's very close in this fight as well. So I do like Tom Aspinall with the well-roundedness. I will go with the prospect in this fight, fighting close to home. He's a Liverpool guy coming out of Team Calbon, representing and fighting in London. So both of us going with Tom Aspinall. You let us know down below in the comment section who you have in this fight. It is a great card. We had a ton of fun doing the videos this week. So if you haven't already, toss a like, subscribe to the channel.
And tell your friends who like MMA.
Yeah, because I mean, listen, picks are what they are. And this past weekend, I only got one wrong. So it's either great or it's good. Or it goes a little squirrely, and we always hear from the fans down below, and it's a lot of fun nonetheless. Again, question mark kicks 2 hours before the prelims. You can tune in for that one on Saturday. It should be a blast. Really looking forward to the fight.
Not to throw a curveball, is this going to be on at a weird time on Saturday? Will this be an early question mark kicks?
It's hard to tell already, but we will update you. So if you're subscribed to the channel, you'll get that update in the community tab. We always feature the votes. We always talk about what's going on over there. So keep an eye out for it there. You'll know when we go live, the sub, the notifications, and so on and so forth. I can't wait for the card coming up this weekend. Keep it locked in with Fight Night Picks, as we always say.
Let's get into it.